This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Solar Points Podcast, but it's going to go a little bit different this time, so I hope you're prepared to go long. Well, I am every day, but that's neither here nor there. I digress. This is going to be the first time ever that we've done a Solar Points Quarterly, and before I explain what that is, I have to introduce my illustrious Ginger Bear co-host, Mr. Kelly Poole, who worked all day today and then decided to troop on into this one. And I thank you for that, sir. But how are you feeling?
I'm fine. I'm good.
And on time, no less. After putting up with all sorts of rich fuckery today. But speaking of fuckery, he's not quite to the perfect 10 yet, but he's about to be. Mr. Nick Duke from the Hard Traveling Fanboys is joining us. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing very well, and speaking of fuckery, Russell, to go ahead and get a little inside baseball right off the start, that specific item we discussed in Orlando just came in the mail today, so there'll be some fuckery going on later as well.
Oh, I can't wait. Oh, this, ladies and gentlemen, this is indeed turned into a special edition.
An all spanky podcast.
It's happening. It's going to be real. And speaking of all spank it. The person who is responsible for the invention of that wonderful phrase,
Jim Ross.
Yes. Jim Ross's stand-in for the night will be from the Geek and Sassy podcast, Miss Jennifer Smith. Welcome to the podcast again.
Worst introduction ever.
I do what
that
I can.
That is not my phrase. That is not my phrase. Don't try to blame that on me, sir.
If you hadn't been there, I don't know that the phrase would have been uttered.
I doubt that. I strongly doubt that. So, but I decided to bring my brand of awkwardness to Sailor's Points once again.
Well, we always, always appreciate that because it's just all sorts of good time fuckery, which is going to be the word of the day, by the way. So if you're easily offended by that word, boy, have you come to the wrong place. But I digress again. This edition of Sellers Points is our first ever quarterly edition, as I said before. And what that means is a quarter of this year has gone by. That's right. We're 25% of the way through 2017. And given some of the shit that's happened this year, it kind of feels like we've been through five already. So that we're a quarter of the way in is kind of telling. But what it means is, like we do at the Happies on the Hard Traveling Fanboys, or at the end of the year, the beginning of the year, look ahead for the Sellers Points podcast, what we're going to do is we're going to take a look back at the first quarter of 2017 in comics and comics media. We're going to kind of give our assessments of it. Talk about where the industry is right now, how we're feeling about things personally, some of our personal favorites, and of course, what we're looking forward to in the next 75% of this year that's yet to come. So, with that in mind, I'd like to just jump right into it and get around to everybody and ask you guys, what comic have you enjoyed the most out of everything on your pull list so far this year and why? And since it is, you know, a nice round table this time, or a rectangle table, square table. I don't know. There's four of us. You can make up your mind on that one. I'd like to start with you, Jenny. What comic have you enjoyed the most out of everything on your pull list so far this year, and why is that?
Well, I've been pretty vocal about my love for Wonder Woman this year, and the reason for that is an amazing story by Greg Rucka. He has just put together this beautiful, epic, sweeping story together with some really wonderful, intimate relationships with for Diana with the humans, and has just kind of put together an epic story along with beautiful artwork by Liam Sharp and Nicola Scott. And so it's just totally blown me away. It's what I read comics for.
And I can vouch for that being an absolute. I think all of us have pretty much loved Wonder Woman this year, starting last year when Rebirth began. It's just been a tremendous work, and it's actually very sad to say that Greg Rucka and Liam Sharp will both be done with the book at issue 25.
Yes, it is.
But at least they're leaving on their terms, and it's not the Tom fuckery that was going on with DC back in the New 52 when writers and artists would just get pissed off at editors or whatever reason and leave. This is them walking away their own accord and happy with the work they have presented. But with that said, Nick, same question. What's your favorite comic on your pull list so far this year and why?
Mine is also Wonder Woman, and you know, Jenny pretty well summed up all the reasons why. So I'll shout out, you know, one in particular, kind of drill down into that. And it's something I've said on Hard Traveling Fanboys, which is, of course, by the way, the longest running weekly episodic comic book podcast in all of Place to Be Nation. But I digress. The reason I love Wonder Woman so much is not since Geoff Johns and Thal Sinestro has there been a better example of a writer taking a villain and almost completely redefining them for the modern generation. The character of the Cheetah, in my eyes anyway, has really been the main character of the narrative here in these Wonder Woman issues. Diana is there, and Diana is outstanding. But if you want to talk about tragedy, and you want to talk about character development, and you want to talk about a writer delving into a character's psyche and taking a little trip around, it's got to be Greg Rucka taking on Barbara Ann Minerva. I mean, it has been mind-blowing to me how much complexity he has been able to imbue that character with, a complexity that I, you know, as a longtime DC fan, had always kind of overlooked the Cheetah and never really thought that she had that much going on. But he has completely proven me wrong. And, you know, it's one of those stories, kind of like when you go back, and again to draw the Geoff Johns comparison, when you go back and read Geoff Johns' Green Lantern run from beginning to end, you really see that ultimately, yes, the story is about Hal Jordan, but it's almost equally as much about Sinestro. And I think when you go back and look at this Greg Rucka Wonder Woman run, you're going to realize it's about Diana, but it's almost equally, if not more so, about the Cheetah.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a really great point. And it's another one of the reasons that I'm very sad that Greg Rucka is leaving now, because I feel like there's so much more to do with that character. And whoever is going to wind up taking the character long term, as the next creative team is only signed on for like 5 issues, I hope they continue that. I hope they keep building that character, because Barbara Ann Minerva has needed a real shot in the arm, and I would call this a chance to give her the real renaissance, like you said, like Sinestro has gotten over in Green Lantern. Now, Kelly, what has been your favorite comic on your pull list so far this year, and why?
Mine probably won't come as much surprise to most of the listeners, but it's been Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. Just, you know, this arc and the seeing Sinestro in his position where he has everything kind of set up, the Corps is, you know, in a bad way. Hal, as always, Hal's best at taking a shitty situation, sometimes because he's caused it, but not always, taking a shitty situation and just saying, okay, fuck it, I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to make this work. By will alone, I'm going to, you know, do this. And really just, I mean, I think this series itself has really shown Hal just going out and doing that. And it's really showing, too, that, I mean, when they put Hal in charge of things, nothing good happens. he's not a good leader. But he is a good soldier, and he is a, you know, if you're in any bad situation, you know, I don't think there is any hero in the DC universe that wouldn't want Hal at his back, you know, having it. And seeing John Stewart, seeing Guy, and recently seeing Kyle, his role change, this has just been a real good series. Now, let me say this, too. This was a tough decision because Green Lanterns, which is dealing with Simon and Jessica, is equally just as good. And I've really loved to see – I love seeing the growth between those two as partners. And, you know, to me, this series has definitely been a fun ride. And it's definitely one of the books that I always put it at the bottom of my stack. So I know by the time I get down to the bottom, I've got something good, you know. And it's a good series. And it's looks like it's got a good future ahead of it.
Yeah, it's hard to say anything negative about either of the Green Lantern books right now because I just read the most recent issue of it today of Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah.
Crazy twist ending on that one. A character I mm-hmm. did not expect to see suddenly pop up in that book. But it's Legends of Tomorrow fans. You should probably be reading Green Lanterns and Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps right now.
yeah.
But... For my part, the book that I will say that's at the top of my list right now has actually been Superman. Now, Wonder Woman and Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, very, very close to that top spot. But Superman right now, I feel like has truly progressed the character in a way that I guess a lot of us never knew we always wanted. He's gone from the brash... you know, young superhero to the kind of the elder statesman superhero, and now to being family man, father, raising a kid who is, by and large, likely going to be the next Superman. You know, long time down the road, of course, he's only 10 years old. But it's still just this interesting dynamic. But more than that, it feels like the current creative team of Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason have really just gotten to the heart of the character of what makes Superman Superman. Like, why did people love him in the first place? What is it that endeared him to the public? And I think it's, you know, real hope, optimism, and just the joy of being alive. That's something that, you know, maybe modern Superman comics had gotten a bit away from for a little while. It seems like they just didn't have that. But when you read it now, that's the first thing that comes to my mind is like, this guy loves what he does. I feel like he's a genuine person. He's relatable. And that's something that, you know, people have often complained Superman just isn't. But I think if you pick up the current Superman and Action Comics, you will see that now the case is quite the opposite. I think Superman might be the most relatable that he's ever been in his publication history right now. So that's, and it's easily just some of the most fun I'm having too, especially with John Kent being there, who is probably the best new character in all of DC Comics. They haven't introduced a ton of new characters lately, but, even if they had, I would put John right at the top. He is every bit his mother's son, but he's also his father's son. It's like they perfectly got the mix of Lois Lane and Clark Kent's personalities, and we got this just fun-loving, yet mostly level-headed kid who's, you know, like a normal kid with superpowers. It's just fun to read. It is absolutely everything I read comics for. But... That said, let's move on to our next topic of discussion. Now, what comic has been the most surprising, good or bad, so far, and why? And, Nick, I want to start with you on this one.
You know, I haven't really had a ton of surprises thus far this year, so I'll give one that may sound a little odd at first. But I'll go with Justice League of America. And the reason why the main series of Justice League of America was pretty surprising to me is because the Rebirth special and all of the individual character issues they did leading up to the main series were all really, really good. Enjoyed the hell out of all of those. And so when it came time for the main series and I read the first three issues and it comes off as a bland, generic, jumbled mess, At least from a writing standpoint, anyway. I will say the art was very good throughout. But from a writing standpoint, nothing really interesting going on at all plot-wise. I was a little surprised by that, given the high quality of what led up to it.
I'm actually going to go ahead and agree with you and say that that was my pick as well, because for all those same reasons, I loved everything leading up to JLA. I was a big fan of Justice League versus Suicide Squad, which was kind of the lead-in event for this. I thought they did a great job of reestablishing Killer Frost and putting her in a really good position to be this new revamped version of that character. A character that, you know, maybe a lot of people never could have seen as potentially heroic. But this one, you know, really felt like we were getting there. But right out the gate, JLA just fell flat on its face. Nothing, like you said, nothing interesting at all. The villains are as generic as they get. They don't make sense, honestly. And this is not at all what we were promised going into the series. And it's kind of proving that Steve Orlando is really good at writing individual characters. If he just focuses on them, he's very good at it. But if you give him a team, that's not his strong suit. He really shouldn't be doing that. He's kind of the opposite of James Tynion IV. Who is a guy who's not all that great at writing individual characters, but if you give him a team, he's likely going to knock it right out of the park.
A little Jeff Lemire syndrome going on.
A little bit. That's another good example. Some people are good with the team, some people are good with the individuals. And now we know which one Orlando is. That said, Kelly, what comic has been the most surprising, good or bad, for you so far this year?
I hate to, you know, kind of sound like I'm following y'all's lead, but that's really how I feel about Justice League of America. I'm kind of in the same boat. Kind of what Nick said, to me, it's disjointed. I just read the latest issue, and the villains they picked for this first chapter, this first arc, are just, they're shitty characters. and I mean, you saw these characters, they appeared, I think, back in the old Justice League run from the 80s, where you had, like, the lineup was, you know, Blue Beetle and Booster and Fire and Ice. And, you know, these are just really not that great as far as villain goes. And the series itself, the books leading up to it, I totally agree. All of the single issues were great. Really nice to see a reintroduction of, like, Adam, Killer Frost, you know, Vixen. They were all nicely well done, one and done issues. And we know who these people are. We're ready for Justice League of America. So let's go. And I'm 3 issues in, and I'm like, man, this book's on the edge of me going, hey, go ahead and cut Justice League. I'm not digging it, you know, but I want to go ahead and stay through the first arc at least. But reading this last issue, I just was like, God, this is such a mess. Why the hell are you doing it this way? I mean, you know, I wanted this to be good, and it's just not. It's not a good read. It's not fun. I mean, the only thing that I find kind of humorous is some of the shit Lobo does. But that's just because I'm happy to kind of see Lobo back in a comic again, for just what it is, you know. But that doesn't make a book. That doesn't keep me in a book.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Like I liked the way that Orlando writes Lobo. And yeah, if he were writing a Lobo solo series, I'd absolutely be buying it. But yeah, this team it's not gelling. It's not working. That's been a big surprise, I think, for all of us so far. But Jenny, what comic has been the most surprising, good or bad, for you so far?
The most surprising comic for me has been Batwoman. Because I'd heard so many great things about Detective Comics, but I wasn't reading it until they did the little Batwoman Begins little 2-issue arc there, and I had to pick those up and try it out, and I just fell in love with her. And then when I started seeing the artwork for her solo series, that just pretty much sealed the deal. It's gorgeous. She is so gorgeously drawn. And she has a great story, taking something that was kind of stupid over there with the monster venom and turning it into something that is, like, really kind of readable and exciting. So, Batwoman.
Speaking of Steve Orlando fuckery.
That was him, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. That was his baby, and all the rest of the Bat team kind of got pulled along for the ride. So, kind of demonstrated early on that he didn't have a good handle on writing a team.
But kind of cool that they let a Nightwing rider, like, lead the ship for once, whereas usually it's the Nightwing rider being pulled along for the ride without much say-so in it. So that's kind of a cool thing, I guess.
Well, like I said, he's got potential. He's a good writer on solo series. I like him that way, but man, that they really are taking, you know, shit and trying to turn it into gold with that Batwoman title. And good on them so far. I've enjoyed both of those issues as well. Now, I want to go into, have you guys, have we dropped or added any books to the pull list in this year, and why? That's, and Nick, let's start with you on this one.
Well, I dropped Justice League of America for all the reasons we just discussed, and then the only other drops that I can think of off the top of my head would be I have dropped from my monthly buying list Titans and Batwoman, but only because of the digital code initiative over at DC, so that I can get the digital codes from individuals who, quite frankly, it's not for me to say the identity of said individual. So, yeah, that's the only reason I've dropped any titles other than JLA. JLA is the only one that I've dropped because of any sort of displeasure with the creative. At this point, I feel like my pull list is in a pretty good place. Rebirth's been going on for a while. The Marvel titles, I'm always very selective with what I pull from them anyway. So I feel like everything's kind of in a groove now. The only issue is new titles that continue to come on board, which I'm sure we'll talk about here in a little bit.
Sure. And on my end, yeah, I've dropped JLA, but and I've dropped Teen Titans and Birds of Prey, Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, also for the digital code that I will be getting from said people who will not be identified on this this podcast. But as far as, like, other books I decided to get out of, I did drop the main Justice League book as well. Right after Justice League versus Suicide Squad.
Good Lord, you stayed on that long?
Yeah, I stayed on that and Suicide Squad all the way to the end of Justice League versus Suicide Squad, and when that event ended, I dropped both of them.
That's like 16 issues, right?
Yeah, roughly. And
fuck that.
And it, well, I don't know if it was that many or not. It might have been more like, was it 12, maybe? 12, 13 issues, but in any case, the books, Justice League was the worst of them, because it would fool me into thinking that it was getting better, because the second story arc, things started to pick up, I was starting to enjoy it, and then the last two issues of it just completely shit the bed in every possible sense. The writing went right back down to the horrible quality from the first arc. The art tanked. There was nothing good about that book. And it's just, it's painful, you know, because Brian Hitch has so much promise coming into it from his JLA run, and it never got better. And in my mind, Justice League should be the flagship book of DC. It should be the one where all the big continuity happenings are going on. But that's not the case. It literally feels like a filler book. It feels like there is nothing of importance happening in Justice League whatsoever. I mean, that can be fine if the characters are engaging, if the writing is good, and the artwork is on point. But when it's a combination of there's absolutely nothing of consequence happening, the characters are not written well, and the artwork kind of sucks, why is this book existing? So I got out of that one pretty quick. And then the Suicide Squad had very similar problems, but with better and more consistent art. That and the backup features in that book just does not make sense to me. I'm like, just tell the story. Like, keep your story all in one book. Stop with the backup stories. They don't tend to really add anything. That none of that ever really gelled or worked for me. And when Marvel ended their digital code process, several Marvel books disappeared from my list. But since that's coming back, I got the feeling that Jessica Jones may find her way back onto my pull list, because lo and behold, there's room now. And I'm ready to get back in. So that would be it for me. Now, Kelly, what have you dropped or added so far this year?
Let's see. From Marvel, I ended up dropping Avengers, mainly because I realized I was reading it out of nostalgia, because, you know, I love the Avengers, but it really wasn't, you know, really wasn't doing a whole lot of, you know, just wasn't, you know, even with Mark Waid being in charge, it just, it's like his stint on Legion of Superheroes a few years back. I don't know what it is with Mark Waid and books that I like, but he just never seems to, you know, catch me, you know, so I dropped it. But I did, you know, I've added a couple of books. I added Hulk a while back when it was Hulk and Hawkeye. I added those two, you know, which they've both been really good reads. But just recently, you know, I picked up X-Men Blue, and I know that, you know, not everybody is, you know, I've read a few reviews where, you know, some folks aren't too pleased with it, but I got a real good nostalgia feel out of reading it. And I think that's kind of what I'm like, I'm definitely going to continue reading this. And I'm interested in reading the Iceman and Jean Grey solo books or mini series, because that's, I think, probably what they'll end up being. I've added them because I want to find out, you know, a little bit about what's going on with the younger versions. Cause I knew it initially back when they first brought them in years ago, but they've done a lot of changes to them. I mean, like during the whole Black Vortex situation, Angel has got these cosmic wings now, and there was some all kind of weird shit that went down during that series, which I didn't read, which I'm kind of interested in reading about now. But Iceman's always been one of my favorite X-Men since I was, you know, back in the day when I was reading them and first introduced to them. Maybe it's the fact that I like the cold myself. So, you know, here's somebody I can, you know, like if I had powers, I wouldn't mind having Iceman's powers. That's awesome. But those are the books that I've added just recently.
Yep. Now, one other book that I forgot to mention that I've added, of course, Batwoman has been added to my list since Jenny mentioned that one earlier. And that brings me back to Jenny. What have you dropped or added to your pull list lately?
Well, I had some trouble getting used to figuring out how to work the pull list, because when Rebirth started, shut up, Nick. When Rebirth started, I wanted to buy everything. You know, I wanted to try at least the one shots from all the characters. And then I'm really bad about going in and picking up stuff off the shelves and not adding it to my list, but just keep picking it off the shelves. Anyway, the ones that I did drop were Flash and Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, because artwork mainly. And I kind of screwed myself over with that, because I think the Flash is about to get interesting again. And then I've added, you know, Batwoman and Super Sons, and then a couple little, little four issue series, one called Lady Castle from Boom Studios.
Nice. And yeah, I think all of us are probably reading Super Sons at this point. How good is that book?
I love it.
That's awesome.
I've read just the, you know, these first two issues, and I'm like, this should be an animated series. I think you could adapt it as is and put it on like Saturday mornings or somewhere, wherever it is that kids watch cartoons, but put this on, I think it's a hit.
Absolutely.
Now, would you guys say that your pull list has grown or shrank since January? Nick, let's start there.
I'm fairly sure mine's about the same. Like I said, I've dropped JLA and I've dropped a couple titles because of the digital switchover, but then I have had stuff like Unworthy Thor, which was a miniseries that was kind of taking up some spots on my list, which I know that didn't launch this year, but you know, it's still, been eating up a spot. Yeah, Dr. Aphra, which I forgot to mention in the last series because I'm kind of a Star Wars mark. I pretty much will check out all the Marvel comics they release at this point, even if I don't wind up adding them to the pull list. That's one that I did wind up adding, mainly for BT and Triple Zero, because those are the the best characters of the Marvel comics, the modern Marvel comics, Star Wars era anyway. So I'd say mine's fairly close to the same. I mean, I really have to go back and look at it, but if it's not the same, it's like maybe one up or one down, like really, really close to being essentially the same.
Okay. Jenny, how's your list looking?
I would say it's grown quite a bit.
Inflated.
From nothing previous, so yes.
All spank.
The first. It took us 30 minutes, folks. 30 minutes. And we finally got an all spanking. But since January, you would say that, well, you were reading back in 2016, but since January, would you say that it's gotten...
Grown. I'd say it's grown.
Okay.
For sure.
Kelly, would you say yours, since January, would you say yours is bigger, smaller, or the same?
That's a personal question. I'm not going to on this podcast.
Yes!
But if we're talking about comics, I will say that I think that I'm kind of – I believe I'm probably my pull list has gotten bigger because I have dropped quite a few, but mainly it's been Marvel books that have been just, you know, like Avengers being the last casualty, just not interesting, just – you know, so, and, but then again, I try to add something that's come out recently, you know, like I said, Hawkeye and Hulk actually were two books I added in the, towards the beginning of the year, which were really good picks. And I've been happy with them. I'm hoping that maybe, you know, X-Men Blue and the Iceman and Jean Grey series will be interesting as well. But yeah, I think it's probably grown and it's mainly been, Marvel books that I've added to my list,
which is kind of surprising considering like how big a, you know, how big a victory we would call Rebirth for.
Yeah,
for DC,
and
for
I
all
mean,
of us.
Really, that's the reason is because I read so much DC. I started out reading in Marvel when I started out when I was little. So I mean, I do root for Marvel, and hopefully, maybe during this podcast, we can kind of talk about them talking about how diversity and that people don't want diversity. And, you know, I like to chime in about what the problem is at Marvel, and it's definitely not diversity.
Well, sure. Well, and we will be talking a little bit about that, a little bit later on. Cause there's plenty of stuff that's happened at Marvel in the last week or so. They've had a bit of an interesting, a unique situation.
but, yeah.
But for me, I would actually say my pull list has shrank since January, mostly because DC has brought in the digital code. So I guess technically it hasn't shrank. It's just I don't have to necessarily pay for certain books anymore, which is going to work out pretty well for me. I don't mind saving money. But yeah, I would actually say that getting rid of the Justice League books, getting rid of Suicide Squad, that was like, since they were shipping twice a month, that was like I dropped six books. So pretty great for, you know, saving some money. And especially since one of my, my favorite indie titles, Copperhead, came back, just miraculously came back from the dead all of a sudden and, picked up right where it left off. So of course I added that right back to my pull list. And one of my other favorite Image titles is the Mark Millar and Greg Capullo book Reborn, but that's a six issue mini and it's about to come to an end. So
yeah, it's really good.
It has been fantastic. I'm I was sad when I found out that it was only a mini, but it kind of makes sense since Capullo always said he was headed back to DC anyway. But there's plenty. That's a really great fantasy story. That's another one that I would highly recommend to people. I mean, at this point, just wait for the trade to come out, but it should be reasonably priced when it does. You know, probably a $9.99 book, I would hope. Go get that one. It is well worth your time. And Capullo's art is Capullo. It's as good as he's ever been. Now, with all that said, let's I think we all are pretty keen on keeping up with how comic book sales are doing in the marketplace. We try to, you know, pay attention to how things are doing. We like to get a sense of, you know, the interest level of the fandom, if the fandom is growing or shrinking. And this is just, you know, from you guys' personal observations. Would you say that you know, you're getting a sense that there's more or less interest in the comics medium so far in 2017. Kelly, how are you feeling about it?
I think that there definitely is interest with, you know, for comics. You know, I know sales wise, I know that you know, just from my local shop, I mean, sales were good last year and sales have been pretty good this year. And, you know, my time in the business, I know that, you know, sales can fluctuate. And that's one of the things that you deal with when you're in retail, and especially when you're in the comic book retail, is it's really up to the big, you know, the companies to put out good product that will get people in the door and get people excited about reading. And, you know, I'm just going to say this real briefly, the problem with Marvel, and this is just, you know, my opinion, is their sales, if they're having any issues with their sales, it's not about the diversity. It's not about what they've done as far as changing things up or trying new things. I can commend a company for trying to do a little bit thing, you know, do something a little bit different. It's the fact that they keep switching or flipping books back down to number one. You know, how many Captain Marvel books has been relaunched in the last 6 years? How many times have we seen Guardians of the Galaxy relaunched, or the Avengers, or, you know, Iron Man, or any other of the characters? It's ridiculous. And I think the fans are getting fatigued having to start over every year or year and a half. And I've been saying this since I had my own place, that they got to stop. I mean, at least DC, when they started the new 52, they ran the distance and they ended it at 52. You know, it ran the distance. And, you know, the last time we had a Captain Marvel book that went the distance was the Captain Marvel series or Miss Marvel ran to 50 plus. And that was back during Civil War, if that gives you any time frame. So it's I think there's the whole fatigue of like, oh great, they're relaunching everything. Fuck me. You know, that's
there is event fatigue out there for sure. And I was happy to hear that Marvel is going to go at least 18 months, according to their people, 18 months without another event after Secret Empire. So yeah, we'll see if they actually hold to that.
I'm not even going to be involved in Secret Empire. I give two shits about
a lot of people. A lot of people feel that exact same way.
Nazi cap. I mean, come on. Let's just shit on 50 plus years of history. You know. Sorry, this is the alcohol talking. I'll shut up.
Kelly rants. They're always fun, folks. But I feel a lot of that same way. I feel like the Marvel's got some problems in the interest department. Like they've been pushing the Secret Empire thing for a while. They've been building it through books, and you know that every friggin' book they have is going to tie into it in some way, because that's the Marvel method. Tie in. Does it matter if you buy it? You never can tell. It's a crapshoot. So you know it's rack them up and let's play.
For me, that's
one of the reasons I think that people are so miffed at how Marvel does their events is because they wind up feeling like, oh man, do I have to buy all of this? Like, do I have to get everything with, you know, the freaking Civil War II label on it? Do I have to buy every single book that says Secret Empire in the banner? That's a lot. That's a lot of money. At $3.99 a pop.
Yeah, when I had my shop, that was what people told me all the time, and I would tell them, no, if all you want to do is just read the main arc, if it's you know, Original Sin or House of M or, you know, Secret War or whatever, just read the main title. I mean, you don't have to read the other books. But the thing is, half the time when I tell them that, they end up putting all of these real shitty details in these tie-in books now. So
there was one event where they had a fight, a major fight between Thor and I think it was like Thor and the mm-hmm. cybernetic Thor. I'm struggling to remember the name of the event, but you read the main title and it's
probably Civil War.
It wasn't Civil War. It was something else. I want to say it was maybe – it wasn't Secret Invasion. It was whatever. Siege. Siege is the event I'm thinking of. During that event, you have the buildup in the main series. It builds to this fight. And then the fight doesn't happen in that book. It happens in the next issue of Thor.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people who were buying Siege didn't buy that.
Yeah, so I had a customer ask me about that, and I remember the customer's name. That was Christopher Smith. He wanted that fight scene. He wanted to see it. So I had to, you know, do everything I could, pull every string I could to get a copy of that book so he could read it. And he was like, "How the hell do you put a major fight like this in a spinoff book and not in the main book?" I said, "That's Marvel for you.
Yep,
that's all I can say. Like, I hate it. I hate it for you."
That's the tie-in method that's killing everything. That's what's the killing the model, and hopefully that's going to be a lesson learned.
I hope so.
And at least I will say this, though. In Secret Wars, or the most recent Secret Wars, you really could just buy the main title and read that. You didn't have to read any of the tie-ins if you didn't want to. I mean, you got a little bit of, like, some good supplemental material in some of them, but you could really read just the main title and get the whole story. So that, at least it's, they can do it. They are capable of doing it. It's just, it feels like, you know, the model over there, the thinking over there is that we don't want to do it. But we digress. We can get off on quite a tangent there about Marvel events. So Nick, from your perspective, you're in a slightly different market from us. What's it looking like in your neck of the woods?
So I'll be honest, I haven't really looked at sales charts in a while because we've been so jam-packed with rundown stuff over on the longest-running weekly episode at Comic Book Podcast and all Place to Be Nation.
He got two
that,
folks.
We haven't done a whole lot of sales stories this year, the first 3 months. So I'll just kind of give you my perspective from being in the shop and talking to people, the, you know, 30 minutes to 45 minutes I spend in the shop weekly. And it seems to me like just based on timing alone – I would say that interest is down. And what I mean by timing alone is that we're at a point with Rebirth where we're reaching, 18 to 20 issues in on some of these series. You know, the number one shine had kind of rubbed off long ago, you know.
Yep.
The people who are into it are into it. And you're not getting a ton of new readers jumping on with issue, you know, 15, 16, 17 or what have you. And over at Marvel – I think a lot of people know, as has been rumored for a long time, that there is another major relaunch coming later this fall that is supposed to feature something of a back-to-basics approach. And I think a lot of people are waiting on that to really jump fully back into the Marvel pool. But not just that, but with Marvel's constant event cycle, these 3 months have also been a period where they're in between events. They're in between the end of Civil War II, which was, you know, absolutely – A disappointment at best. We could say a lot more things about it, but a disappointment at best between the end of that and the beginnings of Secret Empire. And so it just kind of feels like Marvel, more so than DC, is kind of in this weird, awkward holding pattern until they get to the next two big things on their docket. And like I said, DC is kind of real deep into Rebirth at this point. And I feel like for a lot of these Rebirth titles, the readership is the readership at this point, for the most part.
I would agree with that, and you know, it's kind of surprising that Image is not really striking the way that they did back during the when the New 52 shine started to wear off, when people started to get a little tired of that, Image had a bunch of new series lined up ready to debut. One of those was Saga. And we've seen some good new series debut from Image recently. I would throw out their 7 to Eternity, Kill or Be Killed. And while they are critically acclaimed, they don't enjoy that level of sales. They don't seem to attract the readership in the same way. So I've been kind of noticing that too. It feels like the shine from Rebirth has worn off. Yeah, it's made its fans, but the sales have leveled. They are where they are. They're not dropping. You know, they're pretty steady. I know at my local comic shop, DC is currently outselling Marvel. That's just the cold hard truth of it. And it used to be quite the opposite. I remember just before Rebirth started, the exact opposite of that was true. Like Marvel sales were way higher. DC was struggling. But then just as soon as Rebirth happened, it was like that hype train barreled through everything. And it's kept going.
That's because I think DC realized, not saying that, you know, the New 52 was a, I don't think the New 52 was a huge, you know, mistake. I mean, it was a success to a certain degree, but I think Rebirth really was kind of going back to what DC was all about, kind of getting back to their core. Sure. And I think that's what comic book fans want. They want the same thing. I mean, I want the same thing from Marvel. It's like I was saying when I was reading X-Men Blue, I got a real nostalgic feeling reading that issue, seeing the simplicity of just, you know, a good story, characters that I understood, and interesting things that are like Beast is dabbling in mysticism now. He's and I'm like, oh fuck, I want to know about this. This is awesome. I want to see what's going on with this. Hank McCoy, you know, the genius, you know, scientist, he's dabbling in magic now. Holy, I want to see this. That's what I want Marvel to get back to. It's just the basics. They don't have to flip things over every year and a half because, oh, well, we got to do a new series. We got to do this. We got to do that. It's like they need Ritalin. They need something to kind of calm them down and focus them to do what they do best. And I think they've forgotten it.
I think there's a sense of wonder that's kind of been missing from comics. And that's what Rebirth kind of brought back with DC, was that sense of wonder, that sense of, playfulness is not the right word, but it's something that makes you think about, you know, what it is you loved as a kid. Like, why did you love these books? Because they were, pure escapism. You could go into these worlds and it felt fantastical. It felt like something, you know, that you couldn't possibly see in the real world. But then, you know, comics kind of been skewing away from that for a long time, for several decades or a couple of decades at least, where everything went like darker, grittier, more realistic. And while that was good for a time, once everything became that, it started to turn people off a little bit. And Rebirth feels like it's kind of reestablished that sense of wonder. Sure, you can tell a dark story. You can still be gritty here and there, but you know, certain characters and certain books just don't lend themselves to that. Like, you're reading a Superman book, you don't want it to be like all dark and gritty. That's not what people read it for. I mean, I would say people don't read The Flash for that. I mean, you want to read Batman for that, sure. But, Marvel needs to, take a look at that. Take a real serious look at, what they're doing in their books, which aren't, necessarily like the dark and gritty. I'm just using that as an example. But anyway, we haven't heard from Jenny on this subject yet because, Jenny, you're going to have an interesting perspective on this because you're, still a relatively new reader. You've been in it for, about, I'd say, around a year now. And your interest level, just speaking from where you're at, would you say that your interest level has continued to rise or do you feel it starting to kind of plateau a little bit? It's reached its level and where it's going to be. Is it maybe waning a little bit? Where are you at?
Well, I don't know how interesting my perspective is, but no, I've not lost any interest whatsoever. Basically, we started Geeking Sassy because I started reading comic books. Right, so I started hanging out with people and getting to know people. And I'm in my comic book shop like once a week, and they're always super busy. I mean, I always just assumed business was booming because it didn't seem like they were having any shortage of or any trouble selling the books. And
I really wish you'd given us your best Brad Pitt right then.
The Nazi killing business.
I had to work on my Brad Pitt impression. I got the what's in the box thing, but that's all I got.
Whoa, we've gone a different direction. His cousin Aldo Rain sent him a scalp. That's what's in the box. But anyway, yes, I think your perspective is interesting because you're a new reader coming into Rebirth, which quite honestly, as we talked about on the Hard Traveling Fanboys of Rebirth 1 year later episode, Rebirth didn't really feel like it was aimed necessarily at new readers. It was aimed more at the people who walked away from DC at the start of the New 52 because they felt like DC was trying to leave them behind, and this was like DC saying, please come back. But the unexpected happened, and it has actually attracted quite a few new readers. There are a lot of people who saw that Rebirth banner and they were like, I'm curious. I want to know what this is about. And I don't know if any of you guys' comic shops did this, but mine did the midnight release for that Rebirth number one, the one-shot that Jeff Johns did. And didn't know what to expect. You know, figured maybe 4 or 5 people or something like that would actually come out to this thing. Oh, hell no. It was more like 50, 60 people came out to that.
Oh, wow.
We packed.
Ours didn't do it. Our guy here locally is a one-man shop. I mean, if the doors are open, he's the only one there, and he doesn't own a car. So, like, he literally takes the bus to and from the shop every day. And so the bus wasn't exactly running a midnight midnight route that night. So no midnight release here in Columbus.
Well, I remember I was actually in the hospital with my son when it came out, and I was super jealous because I kept seeing all kinds of – you know, midnight release parties and everybody freaking out over the issue. And I had to wait until later on that day and escape from the hospital to go pick it up.
I don't remember if they did it in Enterprise. Kelly, was there any midnight release for Rebirth there?
No, we didn't. No. I mean, okay. No.
But like I said, we did it here. The shop that I go to is like Nick's. It's a one-man operation. He does own a car, though, but he's had already worked, you know, pretty much a full day, but he did, you know, take a little time to go home, get a little nap, and then come back because he figured, oh, well, I'll stay open from midnight to, like, you know, at least 2 a.m. or something like that, and then we'll call it. Didn't figure there'd be a lot of people. Hell no. It was a steady stream. There was at one point a line that wrapped around almost the outline of the store. People standing there trying to get their books. It was crazy. It was completely unexpected. And from then on, like, I can't believe he actually said it, but he was like, that was so successful. He wishes he could do a midnight release at least once a month because it would put him in the black very, very easily if it was like that. And the thing is, DC did play with that a couple more times. They did a couple more midnight releases for other books later, and people still showed up for that. So it was a thing. Very, very impressive times that we're living in. But I would say that at my shop, yeah, sales have leveled a little bit. I've looked at the sales charts recently, and I would say that it does look like, you know, sales have kind of leveled a little bit. Like we're in that period now where things have reached their first plateau, and either Marvel or DC is going to have to do something pretty soon if they want sales to go up again. If they want to get that big interest, they're going to have to take a swing for the fences again. Now, what exactly that means, I don't really know. I mean, Marvel could do it this fall with their hopefully what is a back to basics approach, maybe. Whatever DC is doing with their next big fall event, which is from Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, called Metal, maybe that could do it. Who knows? But I would say that one of these two companies does need to do something big if they want to, you know, get off of this plateau and move things forward or move things back into higher sales and generate more interest. But speaking of that, looking ahead to upcoming titles, events, stuff that we know is coming up, because we do get solicits that that give us a peek at upcoming months. What are you guys most hyped for in the coming months, and why? Jenny, I want to start with you. What are you most hyped for coming up this year?
Well, the thing that I'm most hyped for is kind of real soon, maybe next week. And it's kind of surprising considering it involves The Flash, which I have not been that impressed with. But it also involves Batman. So I'm talking to Button. Batman 21, Flash 21, Batman 22, and Batman 20.
Yeah,
22. 21 and 22 of both of those.
Yes.
Anyway, hopefully, like I said, Flash can get more interesting when he's working with Batman and they're trying to explore the mystery behind the button that came up in the Rebirth special.
Well, I think that is a very good pick. I too, am very excited for that one. But Nick, what's on your radar for the rest of 2017?
Mainly because I'm a massive mark for the guy and will buy just about anything he writes, at least check out a couple issues. I'm going to go with that Brian Bendis Defenders series that's coming out here in a couple months or next month. Whenever the fuck it's coming out. I don't know. Don't ask me. The point is, the book is coming out. It features the Netflix version of the team. It's got Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and Daredevil all there together. So it's kind of an interesting like cross-section of Bendis' career almost, because you've got him writing Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Daredevil at one time, all characters that he had, you know, pretty notable success with over the last 10 to 15 years. So I'm really pumped about that. Anytime you throw Jessica Jones and Luke Cage together in a book and it's written by Brian Bendis, you've pretty much got my money. And here's hoping their Danny Rand is much more interesting than the fucking Netflix Danny Rand.
Absolutely fair assessment of that show. And yes, we will talk about that.
And also to throw one on the DC side, Metal, because it's Scott Steiner and Greg Capullo.
Oh, absolutely. That's I won't harp on too much about that, but that is definitely the event that I am most hyped for, because it is the reteaming of the greatest Batman creative team of all time, at least as in my view. So having them back doing a what they call a Justice League Plus event, which I am so hoping leads into them taking over Justice League. It's probably too much to hope for, but you know what? I can dream. And that, it just looks crazy. It's like, it's this big, crazy event that I know very little about, but you had me at Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. Anyway, Kelly, what is on your radar coming up in 2017?
I think I'm going to, you know, kind of go with what Jennifer said was the button. I mean, that definitely has piqued my interest quite a bit. And the other thing is that I want to know what they're going to do with the Legion. I mean, they've dropped so many Easter eggs and hints, you know, with Saturn Girl and they've got to be doing or prepping something for a Legion revival of some sort.
Well, we know that they are. They're meeting Adam West. That's the big reveal, is that they're going to meet Adam West.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to that, but I mean, you know, in the mainstream DCU, I'm not talking about the, you know, spinoff stuff, which, by the way, if the artist who is doing, you know, these, the art for, you know, Batman or Batman 66 would, you know, jump over and do a Legion series, I'd love that because I love his art, you know. But yeah, I mean, those things are what I'm kind of looking forward to, is the button and whatever they're going to do with the Legion. I just want them to do something. They need to pop up and make their appearance. You know, so that's kind of what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, we don't see much out of the Legion, though. Saturn Girl seems to pop up here and there occasionally in some surprising places. She's been in Batman. She's been mentioned over in Supergirl recently. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, all this teasing, is something going to come of it? And
isn't she confirmed via a solicit for a guest appearance in Supergirl, like, next month or something like that? Like, she's coming to Supergirl fairly soon, I thought.
Yeah, she is. She was mentioned, actually, in the most recent issue of Supergirl that just came out, issue 8. Emerald Empress is...
Yeah.
That's right. Yep.
Is looking for her, or got some information out of her that brought her over to the Supergirl title. So there will be more of a tie coming up there. Will it lead to a Legion series? I don't know. Maybe. It does seem like all of that's coming, along with a JSA title, and now it seems like Tom King may be writing a Mr. Miracle and Big Barda title sometime this summer. He's been teasing the hell out of that on Twitter. So that's going to be interesting. I'm interested to see what's going to come of that. And when we get a look at those July solicits, I think we may get some more information. But yeah, the look ahead to the rest of 2017 actually does look pretty good. So, before we move on to giving everybody our top five comics so far this year, I'd like to just very quickly go around the table here and everybody say, are you more or less hyped for what's coming up in the rest of 2017? Jenny, more or less?
More.
Nick?
More?
Yes. Kelly? Also an acceptable answer.
More.
And I, too, am going to say more. I think there's a lot coming up that has so much potential to go. But, all right, let's go around and everybody, you know, give us from 5 to 1 your 5 favorite comics running right now. Or just your 5 favorite, let's say your 5 favorite comics since January of this year. I'll start on this one and say that my number 5 would be The Mighty Thor. Number 4 would be Unworthy Thor, which is a, it was a mini series, but holy God, was it a great one.
Fucking outstanding.
Yes, it was. Jason Aaron has cemented his legacy.
Finally got to find out what the fuck Nick Fury said.
And boy, was it
perfect. And it was perfect. It was pitch perfect. It's one of those times. It's one of those rare instances in comics where you go, I wonder if it might be this, and then it turns out to be that, and then in execution, it's so much better than it was in your head, like once you have the context of it. Because I had always kind of theorized that might be it might be something like what it turned out to be, but then when it actually happened, it made so much more sense and had so much more emotional weight in context than it did, like, when I was, you know, fantasy booking it in my head.
And it hit me just as hard as it hit you. I know you read the issue before I did, but whenever I read it, I was like, it didn't lose any of the punch. It was all right there. Just
that issue came out the same day, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, as the Superman Reborn reveal of the fake Clark Kent. And so, like, it was a weird experience because I know so many people were excited about that, but it was an experience where I went to my local comic shop, bought my comics, got in my car in the parking lot of the comic shop, and while most people were probably tearing into Action Comics, I was tearing into Unworthy Thor because I was like, what the fuck happened? What is going on? And like, I didn't give a shit about what was going on with Superman at that point.
Truth be told, I actually read that issue of Unworthy Thor before I read the Action Comics reveal, but the internet spoiled the Action Comics reveal for me, and surprisingly didn't spoil the Thor one, which is weird because they've been talking about that for like 3 years. And, I mean, what? But anyway, my number 3 book so far this year would be a book that I didn't necessarily expect to hit with me the way it has, because it's a fantasy title, and those don't usually work all that well for me, and that's 7 to Eternity from Rick Remender and Jerome Opeña. It's a fantastic character book, but man, the artwork will really blow you away. I wasn't sure what to expect. When I loved the cover art. That's what really grabbed me, was the cover art to issue 1. And then when I got into it, I was like, no, this is a very good character-driven story that has that epic somewhere between Final Fantasy, Dungeons & Dragons type feel to it, but with a bit of a future tech twist thrown to it. Not a ton of that, but there's a little bit of that in there. And it's, like I said, it's some of the most dynamic and colorful art on any comic that I've ever seen. So I was absolutely a huge fan. Number two, and this was a tough one because these two books are kind of tied with each other. At number two, that would be Kill or Be Killed and Wonder Woman. Two vastly different books from each other, but each time an issue comes out, I want to run right to it and just tear right into it. But I stop myself because I'm like, no, you need to save this for whenever you're able to fully concentrate on it and give it the attention that it deserves, because it's always something that's going to require far more thought than just your typical like slam bang summer blockbuster type comic books. It's some of the most thoughtful comics that I'm reading right now. And it's funny because one of them is a superhero book and the other one is, a very heavy, murder revenge drama. So that would be my number two, but my number one book of 2017 so far, I said it already in the podcast, but it is Superman, for all the reasons that I said before. I feel like even though the Mixel Pitlick reveal in the Superman reboot...
No, you mean Mr. Mixel Patickle.
Yes, and he does tickle.
Pickle.
Yes, he tickles the pickle. He tickles Kelly's pickle.
Gross.
Lawless is that dude who played him in... Lawless is that dude who played him on Supergirl. He can tickle my pickle anyway.
Mon-El, please.
Both? Mon-El. Either? Yes. Why not?
Yep, and we'll just throw a little Chris Hemsworth in there too, just to
spank it.
And well, we did bring the lotion, so you guys need a break. And we're coming up on a break, so you guys get a chance there. But
damn it.
But yes, I feel like the follow up to Superman Reborn has started off on a very strong footing, so. That was actually my main concern about Superman Reborn was how was the follow-up going to be? Like, okay, you reset everything. You put all the pieces back together, and it's great because everybody's like, yes, this is the Superman I know, love, and recognize. But the Superman we know, love, and recognize also fell into the trap of kind of boring stories there towards the end of his tenure prior to Flashpoint. And I was like, okay, well, you can put all those pieces back together, but if you're not telling an interesting story with this character, it doesn't matter how much effort you've put into it. This is just not going to work. But luckily, that doesn't seem to be the case. They've kept all the things that worked really well at the start of Rebirth, and they've just added them to the stuff that people recognize from prior to Flashpoint. So these two things seem to be gelling together pretty well, so far at least. And it's all working together, of course, in tandem with the larger Rebirth mystery. So smart, fun, just great classic comics. And that's what I want whenever I'm reading a Superman book. I want it to feel like, you know, almost instant classic level. And that's what it feels like to me whenever I pick it up and read it. So that's my top five. Jenny, your top five.
My top five, starting with number five, is Batman, which I'm surprised he was that low, but he is.
Me too.
Number four is Batwoman. Number three is Jessica Jones. Number two is Green Lanterns. And number one is Wonder Woman.
Fantastic. Nick, your top five.
Okay, so we say top five, but when people have ties at number two and actually name six books, that makes it a top six for the record. Sure. So my top six, starting with six, I'm going with Detective Comics because I couldn't find a spot for it on my top five, but Russell named six, so I'm going to name six.
Go for it.
Detective Comics, the Bat Family title we never knew we wanted. Absolutely outstanding from beginning to end. Number five, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. Been an outstanding read, putting Kyle Rayner back in his place. But may I offer one more thing that needs to happen for Kyle Rayner to truly be put back in his place? So Hal and Kyle are sitting there talking, right? They're having a conversation. Hal's like, you know what, Kyle? There's one more thing we need to do for you to truly be inducted back into the Corps. Come over here with me. They go off to a private place there on Mogo. Hal takes him into his bedroom. He's like, see that corner over there? I want you to stand in that corner. Don't move. Just watch what's about to happen. Kyle goes, stands in the corner. In comes Carol Ferris. Hal and Carol Ferris fuck right there in front of Kyle Rayner while he cries and sheds tears. Yeah. Moving on, number four. All-Star Batman. Outstanding thus far. Scott Snyder is killing it. And I've actually really enjoyed the rotating panel of artists. Each one of them is kind of bringing something different to each issue of this Ends of the Earth storyline that I've enjoyed a whole hell of a lot. Number three, Unworthy Thor. A miniseries that's wrapped up now that I've talked about over on Hard Traveling Fanboys before. Russell kind of threw it some love as well. But if you're even a casual Thor fan, and especially if you read any of the early Jason Aaron Thor God of Thunder stuff, you got to check out Unworthy Thor. You won't be disappointed. At number two, Jessica Jones. It's Brian Bendis writing Jessica Jones. It really does – no more needs to be said than that. It's the one of the more natural pairings of creator and character in all of comics. And at number one, like I said earlier in the show, Wonder Woman for all the reasons, all the Greg Rucka, all the Cheetah, all the Diana.
And it's is Kyle Rayner allowed to all spank it?
He's allowed to spank it as long as there's crying involved. Like he has to understand what his place in the world is. Like that's his
I'd
place.
Like to change my answer to most hyped event would be what Nick
that
said.
Would be that. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, let's do that.
I guess as a Hal Jordan fan, I've so resented Kyle for so long, like since the White Lantern and the Kyle dating Hal's girlfriend thing started, that I'm ready for all of that to be undone. And that's really the one thing. Like, they just turned him back into a Green Lantern, spoilers, but they haven't really addressed the relationship aspect of it. And that's one thing that I hated from the moment they started hinting at it. Like, when they first started hinting at those two characters having anything romantic to do with each other over in New Guardians back in the New 52 era, I just despised it. And now I just want to see Kyle humiliated as a result of it.
And we will call him Elias for at least a day.
Well, you know.
He will beat off and apologize to Jesus. So, it's a real donkey show over here today, folks. But anyway, Kelly, your top five.
Okay.
Speaking of going ass to mouth.
Yeah, starting with number five would be Hulk. Number four is Super Sons. Number three would be Champions, which by far I think is the best Marvel book out right now. Number two would be Blue Beetle. And my number one would be, again, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. Those are my top five.
All right. All fantastic picks all the way around. And folks, of course, whenever you guys are listening to this, when you get a chance to comment on it on the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook group, or when you find us on Twitter, we'd love to know what your top five of 2017 so far is. So make sure that you hit us up with your list. But before you get to that, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to take a look at comics and other media. We're going to take a look at the state of comic book television and movies so far in 2017, and then, of course, a little bit of a look ahead. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with a monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse. the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place of Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's blog, of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apuitas podcast, The Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
I'm sorry, Jesus. I'm sorry, Jesus. I'm sorry, Jesus.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the Sellers Points Quarterly. Of course, if you are just joining us, which I can't understand why you would be, we're here with...
Can you even do that to a podcast? Can you join, like, halfway through? Because pretty much don't you have to pick up with at least the beginning and then fast-forward to the halfway point? It's not like a television show. You can't just tune the channel in. How the fuck does that work?
Have I mentioned how much fun it is when Nick gets drunk and then rants on the random things that people say? Because it is it's actually one of the joys and highlights of my life. So the more we get of it, the better. I don't know how good it is for his heart, but it is certainly fun for all of us.
No, my liver, not my heart. My heart, I think, is largely unaffected.
I do. There are times I have worried about your liver. Tonight's not really one of those. You seem like you're doing okay for the shit that you had to go through today. That's getting a little off topic. But anyway, we're here, of course, with Mr. Nick Duke of the Hard Traveling Fanboys. Kelly's back with me. Jennifer Smith from Geek and Sassy. And in the first half, we talked about all things comics from so far in 2017. And then, of course, stuff we're looking forward to. Well, now we're going to get into it with comic book TV shows and movies, because there's a whole hell of a lot to talk about there. So what I'd like to start with is which comic book TV show has been the biggest hit for you this season and why? And Kelly, I wanted to ask you that first. Which comic book TV show is really working for you this season?
I really want to say I think this season's Arrow has stepped up a bunch compared to last season.
Certainly.
I mean, to me, it's kind of a toss up between Flash and Arrow, but I really think Arrow in the end game has really just done a really phenomenal job. Just kind of, you know, this season's really just, it's been awesome. Flash, of course, you know, I think is like I said, right up behind it. But I think Arrow, I mean, even with Scrappy Dog being in it, I mean, you know, this next season, Scrappy Dog and Black Canary 2 is going to be series regulars, which, you know, I'm fine with, you know.
Yeah, they've done a good job of making Wild Dog far less annoying than he was.
I was about to say, they've done some work on Scrappy to kind of give him, you know, some life. And his little origin story, his little, you know, that to me was like, okay, well, he's not so scrappy, but I mean, you know, it's better. It's better that they did that. And the fact that they, you know, finally, you know, after a couple seasons now, we finally get to see some T-spheres flying around and for, you know, Mr. Terrific to actually realize, hey, you know what? I'm a tech genius. I should work on that as my strength, not trying to get in there and you know, tussle with everybody and get my ass kicked. So
yeah, fair enough. But I would still like to suggest that Mr. Terrific see himself to the door of the Wave Rider and just off of Arrow, please.
No. Mr. Terrific needs to see himself to the door of Shark Tank, and let me explain why.
Wow. Hold on. Okay.
Clearly, this dude has invented the most badass hairstyling product of all fucking time because he can take himself from an afro to the tightest, neatest cornrows I've ever seen in my life in the course of like one commercial break. He goes from here's my natural hair to these badass cornrows in like 35 seconds. You know how much black people would pay for that? I know a lot of them that would pay top dollar. Holler at Mark Cuban.
Only Drunk Nick can do this. Oh, it's fantastic. But speaking of that, Nick, what shows?
It's the T-spheres. That's what does.
Is it the T-spheres? Those are fucking amazing. It's amazing.
T-spheres.
How is he doing it? Never mind. That'll just start another tangent. Nick, what comic book show is working best for you this season?
Mine's also Arrow. You know, one thing we're going to talk about here a little bit, you asked which one's most improved, so I want to save a lot of my Arrow talk for later, but I will say that Arrow is the biggest hit for me this year, but I want to throw a major shout-out to Legends of Tomorrow, which, in my opinion, not that I didn't enjoy Season 1, I liked Season 1, but I think I liked it not quite as much as a lot of other people I know probably did, but to me, Season 2 of Legends of Tomorrow really figured out what the show could be. It figured out the things it could do that the other CW shows couldn't, and embrace exactly. Those. It ran in that direction so passionately and so fervently that, like, now, whereas Legends of Tomorrow, to me, in Season 1, felt kind of like a weird a Flash spinoff that, like, always kind of felt – had that same tone as The Flash, and now it has its own unique thing going on. The George Lucas episodes, the Apollo 13 episodes – the J.R.R. Tolkien episodes, like things that no other show on television can do outside of probably Doctor Who. And like, it's just amazing that they managed to do that while also juggling a cast of like 7 to 8 characters. And it's not a situation like Justice League of America over in the print comics where it feels like no character gets time to shine. It feels like legitimately every character, every recurring character anyway, on Legends of Tomorrow this season, to include the villainous characters, all got time for character development. They all got time for their own little arc, and they all got moments that made them stand out. So, again, Arrow won, but Legends of Tomorrow would be right there on its heels.
I agree with Nick. And that is That's
a good segue for mine, actually, because I'm going to say that it for me, it's been Legends of Tomorrow. And that's surprising for me because Flash is usually the show that I go to whenever I start talking about my favorite comic book TV show. But this season, Legends of Tomorrow nailed it on every level. I mean, it started off, you know, just kind of okay. It kind of felt like they were just going to repeat the same tone and direction that they did in Season 1. But with, you know, a few more DC characters thrown in there just for good measure. But then they did exactly what you said, Nick. They embraced this idea that they can do things that the other shows can't. And it's interesting that you bring up the Doctor Who idea because, yeah, Doctor Who actually does do that a lot. It will bring in historical figures and you know, characters like real people that people would recognize and put them in the crazy adventures with the Doctor. Well, that's kind of what Legends of Tomorrow has done in the second half of its second season. That's when it really hit that stride and was consistently good. Unlike the other shows on the CWDC verse, which all seemed to, even Arrow would still have the occasional episode where it wasn't so great. But, you know, even though the quality overall was still way up from last season, Legends of Tomorrow never slipped into that.
And, you know, that's one of the reasons I kind of hope Legends of Tomorrow never goes to the 23-episode season, because I think one of the reasons that Arrow and Flash and even Supergirl, you have some of the down episodes, is because they know they have to write out 23 episodes. You can't just write to your story ending, you know, at a certain, you know, a certain endpoint. You have to fill those 23 episodes. And so when you have five fewer, I think it was this year, I believe it was an 18-episode season for Legends. I could be mistaken. But when you have five fewer hours of television to write, you're allowed to tell a little bit more condensed and focused story.
Compress that storytelling just a little bit, and it works out so much better, because their effects budget is way bigger, too, for all the stuff that they have to put into it. And I will say that that's where the only real shortcoming that I can point to for Legends this season was some of the god-awful CGI that was used, especially where it comes to Nazi Hulk back from earlier in the season. That does not work. Every time
Mr. Hyde from the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen film. Yeah,
that's exactly what he looked like. And it looked like the CGI came from that era and got a significant downgrade still. It's just not good. They should stay away from doing CGI of that type. And I would even suggest that sometimes whenever Ray shrinks, they shouldn't, like, zoom in on him. They should just allow us to see that he is tiny. Let that effect be what it is until their effects budget is high enough that they can actually put some detail into that, because so far that's not working. But that said, it's still easily my favorite superhero show thus far in 2017, though Arrow is running a pretty close second to it. That said, Jenny, what's your favorite comic book TV show been so far in 2017?
I'm totally going to agree with you guys about Legends. It has to be Legends. Every episode, they manage to do something amazing, and the character development, particularly with Mick and Sarah, I can't get enough of it, especially with the villains that they've done this year as well. Taking villains from different shows, putting them together in the hilarious ways, and it's just never boring. It's always great, and it's the show that I look forward to most every week.
I'm glad you brought up the villains, because how awesome have Malcolm Merlyn and Damian Dark been together?
I love it.
They are a comedy dynamo that kind of deserves its own show.
Yes.
I would watch the hell out of that.
They've been great, but let's throw a little love to the guy who's been playing Eobard Thawn, because when we were introduced to Eobard Thawn, it was Tom Cavanaugh playing him. Like, this guy who is playing, like, true and proper Eobard Thawn, we really didn't know much about outside of the Flashpoint episode we got earlier this season. And so this has kind of been his first real opportunity to run with the role, and I would say he has provided Yeah, see what I did there?
Mm-hmm. Run.
Anyway, he's provided not quite to the level of Tom Cavanaugh, but almost like just an alternate take on this character that has become equally valid in the eyes of a lot of fans. I've been thoroughly impressed by that guy. Outstanding work from him, and I don't know his fucking name.
I'm in the same boat. I don't remember the actor's name, but absolutely, I love what he's done too. That he didn't do a Tom Cavanaugh impression. It was like he said, okay, well, all the pretense is dropped and I can just be my full personality now. And this is who I really am. And I too have loved his performance. Really hope we haven't seen the last of him, because he's just been tremendous. And I know that we're all sick of speedster villains over on The Flash, but if that guy's going to show back up on The Flash at some point in the future, I'm not going to complain about it.
He'll have to. I mean, alternate Earths, time travel, like, there'll be an excuse for him to pop back up at some point, if it's not as a prime antagonist.
And I look forward to his return on that or on Legends. Either way, it's good stuff. That said, Jenny, I'm going to stick with you and ask you, like, we haven't gotten many of these so far as far as season finales go, but which one are you most excited for, and what have you thought of the ones that we've gotten up to this point?
I'm definitely most excited for Arrow, although I'm confused as to whether Deathstroke is going to be there or not. I'm going to hope
he's going
that
to be there. He's going to be there. Don't
Manu Quite Bennett, frankly, he needs to stay off Twitter and quit confusing
Manu
the fuck
Bennett
out of me.
Is a notorious dick on Twitter. He likes to fuck with people. Stephen Amell, in his entire time on Arrow, like when he is or entire time since he's been on Arrow and had a Twitter account, like not if he, I mean, if he's being clearly sarcastic, it's one thing, but he has never outright lied to the fans in like 5 years. If Stephen Amell says he's going to be there, he's going to be there. I trust Stephen Amell more than I trust, fuck, I don't know, a lot of fucking people.
And that, the president.
Well, for God.
That's a low bar.
Jesus Christ. You know, that's like saying I trust. Never mind.
Sorry.
Not even.
But I am most excited for Arrow. I
trust
wanna
Ted
know
Bundy
all
with a meat cleaver.
I want to know if Deathstroke's come back, and I want Prometheus to die a horrible death along with Susan Williams. Oh. Can Deathstroke murder Susan Williams?
You know, he'd probably do it just out of spite.
Yes.
But
that would be okay with me.
And what did Susan Williams ever do to you?
I'm still trying to figure out the hatred that everybody has for her. I mean, I don't love her or anything.
Kelly, back me up.
I just don't get it. I just don't understand the
hatred.
She's
a bitch.
Right.
Well, she's not Felicity, I'll grant you. But, like, nobody's fucking Felicity. Come on. If that's the bar we're trying to meet, are we really going to spend the rest of our time on the show chasing Amy? Like, come on, guys.
It doesn't have anything to do with Felicity. It just has to do with Ollie and why it's even a thing. Like, why is that even a thing? I understand.
It just seems like a whole contrived relationship. And it's I don't know. They could have done with it out this season, and I would have been fine with it. It just
– I didn't have
– Ollie can't deal with – he just has a bad mojo with women. It just
well, if that's the case, then Dinah Drake needs to stay far away.
Well, if you notice, I mean,
well, Dinah Drake needs to stop trying to wreck homes over there. And shit.
she really does.
You noticed that too, right?
She's still.
I have fucking eyes. Of course, I noticed it.
She's been diggling to Diggler. I mean, it's just, you know,
Dirk Diggler, a little Mark Wahlberg action. I like it.
You know, I don't
my diggle.
She's been my diggling, and I don't know. It just there's some chemistry between the two, and I'm like, oh, this is not good.
See,
not
I good. Think it could be possibly like Barry's gonna fuck up again and accidentally like erase Lila from like existence, and then Diggle's just gonna be free.
If Barry would
wow back Black Canary.
If
with
Barry would take his dick out of the timeline and just stop it, we'd be fine. We would be perfect.
I wonder what it would
feel
like.
I gotta keep hitting that. Stop it.
Barry just can't quit the Speed Force, though. He's like, I see that Speed Force over there looking fine. I gotta fuck it up.
I want Max Mercury to show up and go, no. Fuck you. Stop it.
Just stand there and be like, no.
No.
No, Barry.
No.
Yes, all right, continuing yes, on yes. So, through this interruption.
Jenny has to take control
frankly.
Of the podcast.
I super loved Legends of Tomorrow's finale. It was crazy as fuck. It was wild. It was emotional and amazing and wonderful. I loved everything about the finale. It was perfect. Probably the most perfect episode that they've done in a whole season of amazing episodes. I'm also watching The Walking Dead, and I liked its finale as well. It is what it is at this point.
Carl.
I know Nick Kang. Didn't get his most
one
perfect wish.
Second away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perpetually one fucking second away. The kid can't die. It doesn't matter.
Carl.
It doesn't really fucking matter what happens at this point. They can put him in the most impossible situations on the face of the godforsaken planet, and the kid is like fucking MacGyver. He's going to find his way out of dying with like a gum wrapper and some fucking string. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I haven't even seen any of this season. I binge Walking Dead, so I missed the finale, of course, but I'm just going to echo everything that Jenny said about Legends. It was, you know, they really did put Sarah into that leadership position. The only thing I wanted to add to what you said was that they finally gave Sarah an episode to really push her character forward in a huge way.
Yes,
and
yes.
It was awesome.
She is the perfect captain for the time for the Wave Rider.
Yeah, loved her. I mean, of course, I loved her as Black Canary on Arrow. But then when they moved her over to the show, I thought, okay, well, it's a good place for her, but how is it? You know, she's just going to be another supporting character. Well, now that she's kind of the team lead, I'm like, man, she is a real leading lady. She has carried some episodes of the show. She's been a great. Like I said, she's been a great leader, and that episode finally gave her the step forward that her character really needed. So, yeah, Legends of Tomorrow for me as a finale that's going to be hard to top. But man, like you said so far, Jenny, Arrow season finale is the one that I'm looking forward to. Mm-hmm. For yes, Deathstroke, but also because Nyssa is coming back, and we're going to get Nyssa versus Talia, which is something that I am very excited to see.
I'll spank it.
Oh, yes.
The only thing that I'll say about Nyssa and Talia is that I'm looking forward to seeing it too. And I like Lexa, who plays Talia. The only thing I don't like is her fake accent. That's the only thing I will say. She's horrible with that accent. Just stop. Come on. Just stop.
But on that note, Kelly, how are the finales working for you so far, and which one are you looking forward to most?
I want to say I think I'm looking forward to the Arrow, finale, and like I said, Arrow. I mean, Flash. I've been, I'm kind of fatigued with the speeder villain. I know that the fourth season they've got somebody new, and that's cool and refreshing. I like that. I already know that they're planning a few other things that are going to go on. Legends is a really, it's really picked up. I think I agree totally with Nick. Nick's pretty much the way Nick described Legends of Tomorrow is exactly how I feel, that the second season, they really found their place, and they have so much room to bring in so many kind of, I'm hoping they'll bring in some other female character to take Vixen's place down the road. And, cause the ship needs, another female, and my favorite character in the show is Martin Stein. I just, and even his relationship with Rory or, Heatwave, that's his character. When I first, saw him in the first season, I was like, ugh, God, Heatwave, what a one trick pony. I was totally wrong. I just misjudged the way they were going to do him. And he has turned out to be like the standout kind of, character for that show.
I think I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was the same way. And I think you were right to think that he would be the one trick pony of the show. Cause honestly, he's the least interesting member of Flash's rogues.
With Captain Cold, though, they make a good team, and I love Captain Cold. I mean, I think they picked the best actor. They picked his voice is just so on point. When he's talking, I literally I could listen to this guy talk all day. Captain Cold has this very, and I hate to say, cool way of just kind of speaking things
cool
out.
Party.
It's like crisp and to the point. This is just how we're going to work this. We're going to work this like this, and this is how it's going to work, and we're going to go here. We're going to do this. Very precise, very to the point. And I loved him in the first season. And him sacrificed himself was a complete – I was like, shit, okay, well, I didn't see that coming. That's pretty,
It's true. And as much as I've loved Rory on the show, as much as I've loved Mick, and I especially love his voiceover intros, which have been just tremendous when they use them. I am kind of ready for him to wind up back on Flash, because by God, I want the Rogues.
I do too.
And it's
I do too.
Incomplete without Heatwave. But anyway, Nick, which season finale has worked best for you, and which one are you thinking is going to be the best one coming up?
it's kind of hard to say because the two shows that I watch, well, I guess there have technically been three season finales that I've watched thus far. Mm-hmm. One of them being Iron Fist, and let's you know, anyway, Legends of Tomorrow and Walking Dead have both been outstanding. Walking Dead would have been, you know, the greatest episode in television history had Carl gotten his fucking brains beat in, but I digress. And, you know, those have both been great. Legends of Tomorrow, like Jennifer said, one of the better episodes, I mean, in the show's history. Brought everything home in such a satisfying way. But in terms of talking about the episodes that are the season finales that I'm most anticipating, I mean, obviously Arrow's on the list, and obviously Arrow even more so given the news this week about Manu Bennett and Nissa's return, and potentially the return of Captain Boomerang as well, which is something that a whole lot of people have talked about. But for me, honestly, I think the season finale I'm most anticipating is The Flash. I think Arrow, while it's been an outstanding season to this point, I think we kind of see where it's going in the end, and that Oliver's going to find some kind of way, probably through, now we know, aligning himself with allies that Prometheus won't think of. He's going to find a way to defeat Prometheus. But if all of our theories and all the rumors about Savitar's true identity over on The Flash come true, I really have no idea how that season finale is going to go. What kind of lessons is Barry going to learn if he's fighting who a lot of people think is behind Savitar's mask? How does Barry avoid making the same mistakes that led Savitar to that point? I just think the whole characterization and plot of the potential season finale of Flash has that one to be like it's just I'm really interested to see that one from a writing standpoint. I think that's going to be the one that's going to be the hardest, yeah, the biggest challenge for all of the CW writers to write and bring it home in a way that isn't just satisfactory to the fans, but it's also got to make sense. Because I know a lot of people last season freaked out and loved and raved with nerd joy at the season finale of The Flash last season. But I'm Greg and I both were sitting there going, okay, but from a writing standpoint, when just two episodes earlier you've had him come to peace with his mother's death, it doesn't make narrative sense. And so I want The Flash to find that level of narrative, like, common sense this season in its season finale.
I would agree with that. I was right. I was actually with you guys on that one. I did like the season finale, but at the same time, that ending, that last bit was like, why? Just so we can have the triggering mechanism for Flashpoint was the only reason to have it at all. And it to undo
quit screwing, you know, the timeline
to undo the best or the most well written episode of The Flash up to that point, which was the Runaway Dinosaur. That kind of hurt, you know, a bit. I'm glad they dealt with it this season though. Had the Speed Force essentially call Barry out on that bullshit. It still doesn't make up for the bad writing decision that was in the season two finale. But still, yeah, you're right. There's a ton of theories out there about who is under Savitar's mask. I think everybody's got their own. So, Nick, who do you think is under the mask?
Barry Allen, a future version of Barry Allen. So, when we come back from the season, or from the random back third of the season break that they're currently in the midst of, you know, Barry is going to the future to visit a future version of Barry Allen. And I am, my theory is that Savitar is an even further future version of Barry Allen. So kind of like between present Barry and Savitar, this version of Barry that he's going to visit in the next episode is like the middle ground in between, like how he gets from here to there, I suppose.
And there's a lot to that. I've also seen some people theorizing that it could be Wally under the mask, but
Wally would be my backup, and then Jay would be my. I think it's either Barry or Wally, almost assuredly, and then I think Jay is like the distant third out of those.
Yeah, I would say that highly unlikely that it would be Jay, but if anybody, he would have to be in that list, and at least a consideration. Kelly, you wanted to jump in there?
Yeah, I just want to say I think my prediction on who's under the mask is fucking Ted Kord. And here's why. Here's why. Ted Kord is so fucking pissed because every goddamn person
from the Arrowverse, you know,
right.
from Arrow to fucking Flash has been stealing his shit left and right. He's like, fuck it. I'm going to get super speed and I'm going to fuck all their shit up because I'm fucking tired of this goddamn shit.
Actually, I
just,
must.
And that's just like... me. That's just me saying, bring fucking Ted Kord into the goddamn Arrowverse right now.
Actually, Russell, I feel like I need to amend my official prediction to say that my actual official prediction is Tommy Merlin, simply because I'm required to go with my I am required legally to live up to my longtime prediction of predicting Tommy Merlin for every mystery character in the Arrowverse until it turns out to be true, at which point I will be like, hey, I called that. So Tommy Merlin won.
Okay.
Barry Allen 2, and then Wally would be 3.
That's an excellent point. That's an excellent point.
Oh, it's so good. And
can we do a segment later on, Russell, where we have like drunk predictions? Where we just
aren't we doing that right now?
Yeah, we're doing it right now, but I think it's something we should do every quarter. We have drunk predictions.
I think that's going to be the quarterly thing. We're just going to rotate guests, but you're all required to drink heavily during the show.
Yes.
Man. You'll have to get in touch with my in-laws to arrange such a thing.
I think that can possibly. Well, actually, I don't want to do that.
Get a soup can and some string is your first step, and then we'll go from there.
We'll set that up during the Guardians gathering. That should be easy enough. But Kelly, I think did you tell us which season finale you like the most and which one you're looking forward to most?
I think for me, the Arrow is, like I said, is going to be the one that I'm really looking for. I agree with Jennifer. I want fucking his fuck face to be fucking just done. Kill him off. Take him down.
Yes.
Get the fucking Bravda on him.
Is that something that happened?
Just kill this motherfucker now because I hate his face. I hate everything about him.
Oh, you're talking about Prometheus. I thought you were talking about Susan Williams. Never mind.
Well, either one.
Yes, she was.
You know, just go ahead and put a boxing glove Arrow right up the taint. I'm done with it. I'm sick and tired of it.
And follow it. And follow it with the Amell meme that has him screaming, "And I liked it." There you.
Please bring back a real villain like. You know, Deathstroke, not this Prometheus prick who, I've got 10 steps ahead of you. Fuck you and your 10 steps. I got 10 steps. It's fucking AA. Go to hell.
Oh, God, we're so far off the rails. Anywho, we're going to move on to a slightly different topic now. So, Nick, which show would you say has been the most improved this season and which show do you think maybe lost a step?
So in terms of the one that's been the most improved, I think it's obviously for me it's got to be Arrow, which it's kind of difficult to talk about because season 4 of Arrow I think was by far the worst of any of the DC CDU seasons to this point. I think it was it just got so far off center of what the show has been and what made the show popular, and it lost its way in such a severe fashion, which isn't to say there weren't good moments. There were still good moments. I mean, Arrow wasn't unwatchable last season or anything, but it just didn't feel like Arrow at a certain point. And it didn't help that it left you with perhaps the most bitter taste in CW or DC CW history with a god-awful season finale. I have talked about before how bad that season finale last year was. It was atrocious. I mean, like, just everything about it. The fight scenes, the plotting, the, like, two armies randomly just running and screaming at each other rather than attempting to fight tactically in any real meaningful way. Like, just hated everything about that season. And then they come back this season and totally redeem themselves. I mean... They jump on from the get-go. They get back to basics in terms of taking a street-level approach. All of the magic subplot from last season where Oliver finds the way through the magical power of belief, which was such fucking horseshit, that's thrown out the window. You get Diggle back in a big important way. You get Felicity back in kind of a role that is more than just being Oliver's love interest, which as much as I loved Felicity, you could make the argument that towards the end of season 4 – or really throughout season four, that's all that she was really doing was being a romantic interest for Oliver and not really focusing on the contributions that she brought to the team. So for all those reasons, I mean, Arrow has just bounced back in such an amazing way. Prometheus has been a fantastic villain, a hateable villain to this point. If we're talking about a show that has decreased, it's really difficult because I've really enjoyed all of the CW shows, and those are really the only shows that I watch comic book related. You know, Walking Dead has also been very good. It's even improved from last season as well. So if I'm going to say a show that has decreased the most because it started out at neutral, it started out at zero and dropped into the fucking crater, I'm going to go with Marvel's Iron Fist on Netflix. That's right. It decreased from non-existent to fucking atrocious. I really don't even know what to say about this show. Like, everything
I
you
sense
thought,
you don't like it.
Everything you thought a fucking Iron Fist show should be, it's none of those things. The best way I can describe it, as I've described it on Hard Traveling Fanboys, which is, by the way, the longest running weekly episodic comic book podcast in all of Place to Be Nation.
That's three.
Thank you. The best way I can describe it is imagine watching Batman Begins, except if Batman Begins were nothing but the Mr. Earl doing the corporate takeover scenes. Like, the most boring boardroom shit on the face of this fucking planet with an occasional fight scene that isn't really that good thrown in. It's like, whoever did the fight choreography for Daredevil, why weren't they doing the fight choreography for this? Because Daredevil is a better Iron Fist show than Iron Fist could ever hope to be. So like I said on a recent episode of the Hard Traveling Fanboys, the quickest way to fix Iron Fist is pretty simple. Pull up the first episode of Iron Fist on Netflix. Fast forward to the end. At the end, Netflix will say other shows you might enjoy, and it will suggest both the second episode of Iron Fist and the first episode of AMC's Into the Badlands. Move your cursor over and just watch Into the Badlands because it's a much better Iron Fist show than Iron Fist could ever dream of being.
Fully fucking agreed on that one. I will start with my decrease, which was also Iron Fist, because my God, it was, you know, Iron Fist, you would think it would be akin to Kung Fu. It'd be like a modern day take on the,
you would think it would be about martial arts.
Yes,
it isn't.
You would think it would be that. It doesn't even remotely get to that until the second half, and it only does it for about three episodes when you're thinking, oh, we're building towards something now. Now this show took a long time to finally get there, but it's getting there. And then it pisses it all away in the season finale, which was the dirt fucking worst.
Fuck those mediums. Fuck them all. Joy, Ward, Harold, fuck them all. Fuck them.
And yeah, that was my least favorite of the of all the season finales. It was awful. Just dirt fucking terrible.
Now, that being said, if they could talk Justin Long into coming in and taking over the role of Ward Meacham in the second season and playing it as Brandon St. Randy from Zack and Miri Make a Porno, we have an opportunity to turn things around here a little bit.
And at least give me one episode with Brandon Routh, and I think we've got ourselves a winner.
We got – yep, absolutely.
But that said, as far as my show that has improved the most, this is a tough one because Arrow, like I said, it's a marked turnaround from last season. But I think I'm actually going to have to go with Legends. I think Legends took from that first season, which I found to be decent, not all that like super special or anything. It didn't like really blow my mind like it did other folks. But then season two comes in and it winds up taking over as my favorite of the CW shows. And that's something that I really did not expect. Developing Heatwave, of all people, into like a must-have, must-see character. The great character dynamic between Ray Palmer and Nate, or Captain Steel, or is it just a Commander? I don't know which rank
Steel
they're giving him, but yeah, they just call him Steel on the show. That's those two together.
A la Shaquille O'Neal.
Yes. but those two together were just fucking fantastic. Everything about that show just started to work for me and work in like really big ways because it fully embraced the like zany craziness of, you know, the extended like B and C, like C and D list DC universe, while also giving us, you know, little teases, little peeks at some bigger concepts that hadn't been played with on other shows. And it does things that none of the other CWDC shows can do. So for me, yeah, the biggest improvement I saw was Legends of Tomorrow, but Arrow very, very close to it, because Arrow has been as good this season as it's been since season two, which still to me stands as the best season of the show. But anyway, Jenny, which show has improved the most for you, and which one has maybe lost a step?
I really think you guys said it all about all three shows. I tried really, really, really hard with Iron Fist, and I tried to see the positive parts of it. Yes. I tried Iron Fisting really hard, and it just...
I'll spank it.
It did not work, but Legends has improved the most because I completely adore that show, and close on its heels would be Arrow.
All right, and Kelly, which show is the most improved, and which one is the most not improved?
Okay, well, I think Supergirl has picked up quite a bit over the last few episodes. You know, it's kind of waning there for a bit. I'm not really that. I'm really not that happy with Jimmy Olsen, aka Let Me Be Captain America, because I have nothing else to do on the show. You know,
at least he seems to be getting his ass handed to him on a semi-regular basis at this point.
I feel bad because the first season Jimmy Olsen really stood out. He was really good, and once Kat left Catco and they put him in that position, they really have just shit on that position. They really just hadn't done anything with it, which to me is bad writing. And making him Guardian is just like, okay, let's do that. But, you know, let's make him a hero. No, that's kind of cheap. It doesn't fit. You're just doing it for whatever. But the highlight's been Mon-El. Mon-El, the whole thing, from beginning to, I mean, they've really developed his character. And the last few episodes with his parents showing up and the Daxamites, and I predicted everything that was going on that was going to happen. I mean, as I'm sitting there watching, and I'm like, yeah, his mother's going to do this, his mother's going to do that. And I really think doing it fit. I mean, it fit really well. It was really well done. But I also agree with what was been said about Legends. Legends has been another. I mean, just, it's been outstanding. I mean, it just, everything they've been able to do with the show has been spot on. You know, the characters, you know, that's the one show where you have this ensemble cast that they really and truthfully step in and really give each character some time to kind of shine. And you know, like I said, Martin Stein's my favorite out of the whole show. He just kind of stands out. He's, you know, the elder of everybody basically in the show, and him and Jax's relationship has grown quite a bit. And Jax himself has kind of come about and has really grown as a character, just like, you know, White Canary, or however you want to, you know, she's definitely the captain of that ship. And, you know, seeing Rip when he finally gets brought back into the fold, I mean, it's just good all around. I really hope this next season we get to see, you know, some new stuff, and they've got so much material to work with. There's so many possibilities with that show that it's kind of endless. You know, the other shows, they have kind of limitations on what they can do, but with Legends, they can do whatever the fuck they want because, hell, they got a time ship. They can go and do whatever they want, you know.
And given that season finale, what do you think the odds are that we see Commandy?
Hey, you know what? I'd be for Commandy. I'd be for Bawana Beast. Any of these B-list characters they want to bring in, bring it. I'm ready to see it. I mean, if Mon-El, my man, has actually hit the small screen and made an impact, possibilities are endless to what they can do as far as bringing in characters.
That is a very good point. Who would have thought that at this point people would be saying that Mon-El is their favorite character on Supergirl?
I would have. I would have never. If you would have told me this 5 years ago, oh, you know, Mon-El's going to be in a TV show. In fact, bullshit. No way. You're crazy. You need Prozac. You need help.
And it has been a boon for the show. Mon-El's been a hell of an addition. One of the best additions to any of the CW verse.
And on a personal note, he and Melissa actually are a couple now.
Yes, they are a legit real life couple. Which, you know, speaks to the nature of putting people together with great chemistry on screen. Sometimes it becomes real. It's funny because she had so much more chemistry with him than she did with her at the time real life husband, who also guested on the show back in season one. But anyway, let's take a look now. We're going to switch gears a little bit because we've talked about television, and now we're going to wade into the difficult, often minefield that is comic book films. Boy, I'm glad we're doing this in a closed environment, not where there can be a lot of commentary from the outside peanut gallery. So anyway, Nick, I want to start with you on this one again. Which comic book movie so far in 2017 has been the best, and why is it?
First, can I ask you a question as it relates to the question?
Sure.
Is there any other acceptable answer besides Logan?
Nope.
Lego Batman.
Nope.
I guess.
I
fair enough. There are technically two. I'll grant you that. Anyway, Logan, because it was a fucking masterpiece.
I have a feeling it's going to be clean across the board, but I will throw some love to the Lego Batman as having
Lego Batman was great. I mean, like, for what it was, but it's apples and car tires. Like, they're so
fair enough.
You know, it just you can't really compare the two, and we're talking about Lego Batman, which was a very good family animated film, and we're talking about Logan, which is
not,
other than The Dark Knight, probably the greatest film the genre has ever produced.
It's more like apples and kumquats. Zing.
We'll find a way to throw Pussy Willow in there too, and then you just never know what's going to happen. I'll spank it. Anyway, Kelly, your thoughts?
I'm going to agree with. I mean, no other question. I mean, it's Logan.
Yeah.
If you don't pick Logan, then you're a communist and a Nazi, and I don't like you. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean,
or a Nazi, as Brad Pitt might say.
Nazi. This movie ended the Logan legacy, but in such a way that was dignified, and you know, with him and Patrick Stewart, you know, ending Professor X and Logan at the same time, did it extremely well, and setting up Laura Kinley as the next. If they don't put her in the Wolverine title in the next film, then they're fucking dumb. And I probably won't see the next film if they don't do that, because that's the way it is in the comics. And she did, in 45 minutes, express so much emotion through her body language. This young actress is amazing. And if you don't think so, then I don't like you. And I don't want to have anything to do with you. And you're a Nazi. You're a Hydra agent, and I want to have nothing to do with you.
There you go.
So basically, yeah. Logan is the film that by far, at least at this point, is the quintessential Marvel movie that has stood out. And Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart, God bless both of them. They have done such a good job with their characters, regardless of the shit movies they've been put in. They have been the shining example of their characters in those films, because not every film that they have been in has been good, but they themselves have made the film, they themselves have been good in those films, regardless of the shit story they've been put in and they had to work with. So,
and
You know?
Yeah, it's hard to argue against Logan. Jenny, your thoughts on this year so far in comic book film?
Well, it's got to be Logan.
Clean sweep.
You say everything about Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart and even Stephen Merchant in that movie, who was totally unexpected to me, kind of stole my heart a little bit in a movie that was just overly emotional, you know, for a comic book movie, but in a great way.
Yeah, his performance as Caliban was very unexpected. That was not a part of the movie that I went into thinking, okay, well, this has all the potential in the world to really break out. But, yeah, really hit home for me as well. Patrick Stewart's performance in particular is the one that hits home for me whenever I watch that movie. It's moving. It's funny. It's heartbreaking. It's everything that you could have hoped it would be and then some. And if it's not nominated for an Oscar, I don't know what you have to do to get a nomination if that doesn't do it.
And there's something about watching a little girl just behead people and straight up murder them that's just joyful.
Russell, let us recall that The Dark Knight was not nominated for Best Picture. So, like,
yeah,
The Dark Knight got the supporting actor nod, and it got a set design nod, but it was also largely rejected, and it didn't have nearly the violence that this movie has. I mean, like, I agree with you, but I would be highly surprised if this changes anything.
Oh, I don't expect it to get the Best Picture nod, but I was just thinking like the Best Supporting Actor nod for Patrick Stewart. If he doesn't get it, then I have no idea what a person has to do to get that nomination.
You have to have a supporting role in a film that not many people have seen. That's the first
one. when she walks out and literally drops her backpack and she pops her claws and she is just staring them down and the guy's going, no, no. I'm like, fuck you and no. She's about to wreck your shit. So just, you better fucking run.
That's a good point.
She does. And that whole, like I said, she did nothing. She didn't speak. She just grunted, and her facial and her body language, when she shrugged and she just threw her arms back, I was like, she knows her shit. She is awesome.
Yeah, and the fight choreography of Logan was easily the best fight choreography we've seen in an X-Men movie. And that's saying something, considering when you look back at X2 and how well it was choreographed. And even Days of Future Past as well. Both of them had great fight choreography, but Logan eclipses both of them.
Hey,
we're talking about Logan and fight choreography, and one of the people who loves that a whole lot is Greg Phillips, and he just stuck his head around the L-shaped corner of the Vancouver British Columbian studios to offer his thoughts. Here are his thoughts on Logan.
Little static on the line there, but it's always fun to hear from Greg.
Is that one of those new chip bags that are made of, you know, biodegradable and that just crinkle up? I mean, oh my god, that was horrible.
It's Greg crinkling water bottles into the microphone as he does, I don't know, every fucking episode. Second of our podcast.
While he watches basketball games.
Yeah,
while he watches basketball games.
Not even paying attention to the episode, just watching TV. But we love him anyway. And that brings us to which upcoming movie has the best trailer or trailers, and which one are you most hyped for? Jenny, let's start with you on this one. Which of the upcoming comic book movies has the best trailers, and which one are you most hyped for?
I think my answer will surprise exactly no one, because it's Wonder Woman. I watched all of them today again. I kind of fell in a rabbit hole of movie trailers and had to watch Justice League again. And Wonder Woman, all of her trailers are really, really well done. It might give away a little bit too much, but everything that it gives away is fucking crazy and awesome and beautiful, and I love it, and I'm extremely hyped for that movie. They wait till the end to put in her little theme music, and it just does it for me.
Oh, I agree.
It hasn't really given away anything, in my opinion. In terms of plot, like, we know Wonder Woman is leaving the island, and that's pretty much all we know, because we haven't really seen anything in terms of the threat that she's going to face once she leaves Themyscira. So if you want to have issues with the Wonder Woman trailer, whoever's listening to this, that's fine. But I think showing too much, I wouldn't say that's an issue at all with these trailers to this point.
No, I wouldn't either. I feel like it's shown exactly
the appropriate amount.
Yes, the appropriate amount has been shown. You get the sense of the good chemistry between her and Chris Pine, Steve Trevor. You get a taste of how the action is going to flow, and you get all the basics that you need to know for the story going in. Well done. Well done, trailers. On that note, Kelly, which movie has the best trailer so far, and which one are you most hyped for?
I would say Wonder Woman is like the one that I'm completely I'm hyped to see. I mean, Guardians is going to be good. Sure. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Even the Thor, the recent Thor trailer has been is really neat. I love the fact that Jeff Goldblum is being the Grandmaster. Whoever the casting agent is, he needs give that guy some more money because
give
that's spot on, you know. But you know, Wonder Woman, the music, the whole. Gal Gadot is just, she is Wonder Woman. She's like Linda Carter. I mean, I've already seen it. I mean, she fits the bill. The only thing I really hate is the fact that Linda Carter is not a part of this film. I would have loved to see her be, you know, Queen Hippolyta and have that, you know, kind of passing the torch on to the next person. And I don't know why that didn't happen, but I'm hyped to see what this film is about. And I think this is going to be the DC film that kind of cements the DCU. That's just my judgment. That's my opinion on the fact that, you know, a lot of these films have been like Batman and Superman got so much hate/love. And I tell folks, look, watch the director's cut. It's such a better cut of the film than the theatrical cut. Watch the director's cut because it really does go in a lot further. And, you know, I did enjoy the film for what it was. But I think Wonder Woman is going to be the one that just kind of kicks everything up and brings it up to that point where folks are going to be excited about the DCU universe and go out to the theater and see the films.
It certainly has that potential. And I've enjoyed the trailers as well, but before we get to me, Nick, which of these movies so far has the best trailer, and which one are you most hyped for?
Despite the fact that I feel like the most recent trailer revealed way too much of the fucking movie, I'm still going to go with Spider-Man Homecoming, because the two trailers thus far have nailed, to me, what has been the two elements that have been the most missing from the Spider-Man franchise on film to this point, and that is setting and tone. And these trailers have captured the fact that this movie, it is a high school movie. High school is not in the movie. It is not a part of the movie. The movie is very much about Peter Parker coming of age in high school and finding his way. And that fact comes across in these trailers so beautifully. It's the Spider-Man movie I've always kind of wanted to see, even if, you know, the old Amazing Spider-Man franchise did take a lot of direct cues from the Ultimate Universe. This one probably won't take. I feel like this one, just for the tone alone, is going to be the Spider-Man movie I've always kind of wanted.
Okay. So both trailer and hype is the same movie for you.
Yeah.
Okay. On my end, it's actually going to be a little different. I think that for me, the best trailer, surprisingly, this may come as a surprise to some folks, I think Thor Ragnarok has the best trailer of all the upcoming movies so far. That first trailer just hit all the buttons for me. Like, it has that darkness in it, because you see Thor kind of in a hell-like setting, and dropping some hints for Surtur, I think, to make his appearance. Hela looks awesome. The shattering of Mjolnir at the beginning was
shouldn't be in a trailer.
It probably shouldn't have been in the trailer, but I got hyped real fast. Love the Jeff Goldblum bit. Love how it looks like he's playing this part. I think he's going to steal plenty of scenes going into this movie. And then, of course, that closing line, the applause line that gets everybody, it got me too. You know, he's a friend from work. That I couldn't help it, man. I went back and watched that over and over again because it was just funny. And I was like, okay, that's – you got me. This might be the best Thor movie. I don't want to, you know, speculate too far, but it – there's potential there. There's more potential in this than I originally anticipated. But that said, it's not the movie I'm most hyped for. The movie I am most hyped for is, like Kelly and Jenny said, Wonder Woman. Because for reasons that they both have hit on, it's the movie that could finally, in the larger public's mind, put the DCEU back on, or put it on a track toward success. Now, is it enough to completely right the ship? No. They've had three divisive movies up to this point. Well, one that I would say was divisive, pretty even split between fandom, and then two that seemed to have, you know, more hate than love, if you will. So they're kind of rocked back on their heels, and they need a win. And looking at what we've seen out of Wonder Woman so far, it looks like all the pieces are there. It looks like everything has come together, that this is gelling in a way that the DCEU really needs right now. And I'll even say I won't go so far as that with what I saw out of the Justice League trailer, which was really good. There's still a lot of room there for things to go the wrong way, or not the way that they need it to go. But for Wonder Woman, I feel like this is the movie that is going to show people that, yes, there is potential in this world. You can work within it and make something good of it if you have the right people involved. And seeing the passion from Patty Jenkins and from Gal Gadot and from Jeff Johns and John Berg, all the people that have been involved with making Wonder Woman, it really seems like this is going to be their moment to shine. I hope it is. I hope this is also going to be that moment that really breaks Wonder Woman back into the lexicon that you know, she's been not exactly missing from, but her profile has certainly not been as high as it is right now, and I hope that the movie only increases that for the character. So, with that said, we can move on to our final category of the podcast, which is kind of a broad spectrum question. It's the idea of there being a big winner and a big loser so far in this year. Now, of course, the year is still young, and we've only been through the first quarter of it. But this is kind of the point to the airing of grievances, if you will, or the heaping of praise onto to whoever you deem fit. So this can be a comic book company, a creative team, film studio, TV show, just whatever. Who is the biggest winner and or the biggest loser of 2017 so far? Nick, let's start with you.
Sure. So for the biggest winner, I'm going to go with 20th Century Fox, and specifically their Marvel division of films. Let's dial the clocks back just 2 years ago, and Fantastic Four was about to be a bomb, and everything seemed really, really dire for that company. There were rumors of, can they work out a deal with Marvel for the X-Men rights, or for the Fantastic Four rights? Can something happen here to save this you know, failing line of films? And last year, of course, we got Deadpool, which was a revelation for a lot of people. And then this year, they come along with Logan. And in those two films, they have presented us with true alternatives to the rest of the superhero genre. Films that, quite frankly, no other studio can make. And in all likelihood, no other studio will make films like these. So from on life support to thriving like never before, I think clearly Fox's Marvel division has to be the big winner. And for big loser, you know, let me be a little honest here with the listeners. I got the list of questions for this podcast like 2 days ago and didn't bother to fill them out until like 30 minutes before air, and I've been drinking all day. So when I came to Biggest Loser, I couldn't come up with anything. So when I think of the Biggest Loser in comics, I always have the same answer, and it's Dan Slott, because fuck him, that's why.
You know what? I've waited the whole podcast for that to somehow work its way in, and I'm glad it worked its way here. Thank you, sir. That was wonderful, wonderful timing. Now, Jenny, let's move over to you. Biggest winner, biggest loser of 2017 so far.
I think my answer for biggest winner is a little bit personal, just because DC Rebirth has been such, like, just a huge thing for me. And it's just continued to find its way into my heart this year and in new ways and in unexpected ways. So I'm just going to say DC's Rebirth has just been my biggest winner. And then the biggest loser would be Iron Fist. Because fuck Iron Fist, that's why.
There you go.
It has certainly been a unique situation. Now, Kelly, biggest winner, biggest loser 2017 so far?
I think DC, I agree with Jennifer that, you know, DC's Rebirth has been an exceptional restart for their universe. I think that it's across the board, it's been extremely successful. I've enjoyed it. I know a lot of folks that I've talked to have enjoyed it. I think in all aspects that it's, you know, DC has kind of picked up where they may have dropped the ball with the New 52, even though, like I said, the New 52 was semi-successful and it did a lot of good in its own right. But then again, it really was convoluted in some areas and made a lot of old time followers a little distracted by it. And maybe new readers, you know, they brought in some new readers, but it, you know, like I said, DC Rebirth is, I think, exactly what they needed to kind of bring everyone back into the fold. Loser-wise, I want to say, yeah, Fox has done a lot of great things, but their latest edition, X-Men Apocalypse, is a steaming pile of shit, is what it is. And, you know, thank God they did great with Logan. Because they shit all over the X franchise yet again. They don't know how to do an X film. Sometimes they hit it, a lot of times they miss. And for them to have one of the more popular franchises in their hands, they just shit on it. They don't know what to do. They have all these toys in the toy box. And, like, you know, they did it right with Deadpool. Deadpool, they took all the right points out and they did it exactly how they should have done. And they proved that an R-rated film, comic book film, can succeed. And, you know, they did such a good job with Logan and with Deadpool. I just want them to do the same thing with X-Men. How fucking hard is it? You know, you shit on the Dark Phoenix saga and this X-Men Apocalypse was just eye candy. You got Olivia Munn playing Psylocke, which is good casting appearance-wise, but holy shit, she can't act. And they gave her like six lines, and thank God probably they gave her six lines because, you know, she can't act. But, I mean, come on. I love the X-Men. They're what got me into comics. John Byrne, Chris Claremont, that era is when I grew up, and then you just shit over everything. Fuck you, Fox. Come on. Get off your fucking high horse and get this shit right. And fucking, if you can't get Fantastic Four right, then fucking sell it back to Marvel and let them do it. Because they know how to take care of their shit. This is fucking bullshit. It is fucking bullshit. I can't stand the fact that the First Family is treated like bullshit. This is just... Let me say it again. It's bullshit.
We're going to have to soundbite that. Anyway, my biggest winner and biggest loser, probably going to be kind of predictable here. Biggest winner, I'm actually going to give it to the WB film and television divisions right now. because, like I said, this is early 20. This is just the first quarter 2017, but both of them have made some impressive moves and some strides here that kind of give them a big leg up. And in the TV division, of course, we've seen the massive improvement on Legends of Tomorrow. It's just this breakout show that is so much fun to watch. Their interconnected universe on the CW, it has gotten away from just being, I don't think it ever really was the standard CW shows. It has really taken on its own thing, and it has morphed the TV network around itself rather than morphing to fit the mold of what the CW wanted. And I would say that, the hype that they build around it, the storytelling, the character development, all of that has just worked so beautifully and so perfectly well. And on the film side, I got to give it to them for some really great Wonder Woman trailers, a very solid first trailer for Justice League. But more than that, they announced some big gets for their DC Extended Universe. And so long as it holds, they're going to be able to hold on to this little trophy. But of course, they signed Matt Reeves to do the Batman. The director's last name is McKay, who did Lego Batman, is going to be doing a Nightwing solo movie, but the big one. Joss Whedon signing on to do Batgirl. That is huge. That is a coup for them. Getting the guy who helped to shepherd in the Avengers for Marvel Studios to jump ship to the other team, if you will, and shepherd in Batgirl, a character that I don't think it was on anybody's radar up until the time they announced it. Nobody was like, oh yeah, Batgirl's totally going to get her own movie, and not only that, Joss Whedon's going to direct it. Did anybody see that coming? No. It just happened. No. Big surprise. No. Big shocker. And what a home run for DC Films if they can hold on to that one. If they can make all of that happen, that is a huge, huge start to their 2017. Now, on the other side, sorry, Marvel, you're gonna wind up on the shit list on this one, and here's why. Iron Fist, to begin with. Fuck all that show. Wow, what a train wreck of shattered expectations. You took, well, it's been covered. It's been covered why that show sucks and why it should probably never have a second season. And I hope it doesn't.
If they're going to do a second season, then put in one with Luke Cage and do, yep, Iron Fist and Luke Cage.
Yep, do it.
And
Heroes
just do
for
one
hire.
Season. Heroes, yeah, for Heroes for Hire. Don't, yep. And I haven't even watched the series. I have not, but I have listened to so many people tell me I can't watch it now. It's like, well, fuck it. It's a big steaming pile of dog shit. I'm not going to watch it.
Yep, that's,
you know,
that's,
I'll fucking Wikipedia it to find out what happens. You know,
that's pretty much all you need to do. But that's not the only reason.
Do your one season of Heroes for Hire. Have Luke Cage get out of his bullshit Claire Temple relationship, and then do a season of Luke and Jessica together, like you should be doing.
And that would make up for so much. But the other reason that that Marvel's on the shit list right now is because of all this push for Secret Empire. I know that they're not going to be doing the events for 18 months after, but you're still going to immerse your entire line into Secret Empire. It's like, yeah, we learned our lesson not to do events, but we still haven't figured out that we shouldn't be like jacking everybody for money.
Fuck Secret Empire. Yeah, fuck it. Fuck it right in the nose.
And then one other part that...
I'm going to be reading that series.
Quite frankly.
Nick, I want to know, I want it in triplicate what that whole shit's about. I want you to talk about it. I'll be listening to your podcast. I want to hear it because I'm not going to be reading it.
Listen, I couldn't explain fucking Civil War II for most of that, so I make no promises as to my ability to explain... Why
Look, Nick,
Secret
just
Empire
make it
exists.
Up. I won't know.
That's a good point.
Just
a good
make
point.
It
you
up.
Know.
You just make it up, and I will be like, oh, really? Galactica showed up and wore a Speedo?
That's
excellent.
I like
That's
it.
Excellent. I love it.
And
why
and
did you wear a Speedo?
It.
I don't know. Spank it.
Spank it. That's right. And, there you go. And the last point that I'll make for Marvel, this isn't really so much their fault, But sure. This point really isn't their fault. They couldn't have known. But it's just a shit thing that's happening over there with this high-profile launch of their new X-Men line that they were very excited about. They pushed it really hard to make it happen. And then the
arc, now it's overshadowed.
It's gotten overshadowed by the controversy around X-Men Gold number one with Adrian Syfe putting in anti-Semitic and anti-Christian Quran verses hidden throughout the art or hidden within the art of a couple of pages. Now, to Marvel's credit, once they were made aware of it, they fired him from the book and updated the art for future print versions and for the digital versions of the issue. Shit situation that they handled as best they could. But
yeah. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, but and he's gone. He has guessed correctly that his career is certainly over, at least as far as the big two are concerned, probably for Image as well. But I would say that whole situation also puts them in kind of the loser category for this early part of 2017. Hopefully they can turn that around. And it sounds like, at least X-Men Blue is off to a really solid start. Heard a lot of people talk really highly about that book.
It's awesome.
I'll certainly be checking that one out. I'm sad to see a lot of the negativity towards Weapon X, which was the one I was most looking forward to. But haven't heard a lot of people say anything good about it, so that's unfortunate. And of course, the loss of Jeff Lemire on Old Man Logan is a huge blow. Looks like Jeff and the loss of Jeff Lemire at Marvel Comics, period, is an even bigger one for them. So, not off to a great start this year, Marvel. But you still got a long way to go. Plenty of time to turn around. Lots of things coming up for them. And I'm sure that by the end of this year, they'll probably have had quite a few wins to put under their hat. But with that, that brings us to the end of this episode of Sellers Points. We're very glad that you guys got to join us. I want to thank our special guests, Jennifer Smith and Nick Duke, for joining us in this episode. Thank you guys for taking the time here this this late Saturday night. To join us. And with that, I'd like to let you guys kind of shill your own stuff for a minute and tell us what you got coming up on your own podcast and where people can find you. Jenny, let's start with you.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Jenny Cruz, C-R-U-Z 2814. And then Geek and Sassy, we have a Twitter account at Geek and Sassy. We have an episode coming in about a week or so that might have a special guest on it, and we're going to be talking about some D&D.
Excellent. We're looking forward to that one. Now, Nick.
I have a question for Jennifer. I heard a rumor. I don't know where I heard this rumor, but I heard a rumor that at some point you were going to be discussing the Brian Michael Bendis title Alias.
Yes. Well,
with a special guest, and I was wondering if that episode is ever going to happen, or if that was just a waste of fucking time.
No. I would never dream of wasting anyone's time.
Yeah, I don't. Just accidentally wasting it.
Right.
Very good, Mr. Duke. Very good. Now, Nick, where can people find you, and what's coming up on Hard Travel?
Hey, he
Pandas?
Said it like three times. Come on. Come on. Come on. He's plugged himself like three times.
Listen.
Come on.
When you work weekly with Greg Phillips, you learn the art of the shill, because Greg is the most shameless shill on the face of this godforsaken planet. So
much plugging.
I took a little page out of Greg's Phillips book. Greg Phillips, by the way, who is my co-host on Hard Traveling Fanboys, you can follow him at gphillips8652. I'm at nickduke87, and we're here every week. We just dropped our countdown of the top five Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo Batman issues from their New 52 run, and coming up next week, we're going to have an episode that a lot of people have asked about since the start of our podcast, if it was ever going to happen, and it is finally going to happen. We are doing an off the page where I am going to drink whiskey and watch Batman for fucking ever.
Yep.
For some god unknown reason.
Yes.
And just Fuck.
Go ahead and just do some crack. Do something, because that's... I don't know if alcohol can get you through that.
At some point, I don't know how deep we'll get into it on this episode. At some point, we're going to do the Batman and Robin episode. And between these two episodes, I'm going to lay out my case for why I actually think that Batman Forever is the worst, is the bigger abortion of a Batman movie, in my opinion.
And this is going to be some fun stuff to listen to. I can't wait. And, of course, we will be back in a couple of weeks, and we're going to have a special guest on our next episode. We're actually going to be joined by Mr. Tim Capel, as our next episode will be doing a rebooking of Onslaught and Heroes Reborn.
Just don't do it. That reboot.
As I get ready, folks, because we're going to wade in some shit ourselves. But it's going to be a good time because Mr. Tim Capel is an encyclopedia of Marvel knowledge. This guy, he knows his shit. He is somebody that I would trust on anything when it comes to how Marvel can make their events better. Or if he says that an event is good, if he says a Marvel story is good, you know it's worth reading. This guy is one of the most knowledgeable people out there. And that, of course, you can find Kelly and I on Twitter as well. You can find me at Russell_Sellers. That's on Twitter. And Kelly, you can find him at HKP2814 on Twitter. And with that, you can also what you should do right now is if you're on Facebook, go to Facebook, look up the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook group, join that, and you'll find links to all these shows and more. Join the discussion. We like hearing from you guys. Give us your opinion on the best and worst of 2017 so far, what you're looking forward to, what you've enjoyed, your top five comics so far, everything. Just tell us all about it. And with that, we thank you again for joining us, and we will see you guys on the next episode of Sellers Points. Thanks again. But nothing comes from indifference. I look inside of myself. When I find some kind of conviction, or when I bid the hero farewell, or when I be defined by things I could have been, we'll be right back.